kind of obvious by your body language. You're not totally thrilled. Talk to me about the night.
You know, not one of our better events.
The best shots of the whole night were after the bell, and I don't know how the judges saw that.
I apologize to Bud Light. I'm not biased. I drink any beer, and tonight I'm drinking Bud Light all night.
Fedor Emelianenko has signed a multi-fight deal with Bellator MMA.
I like Ronda, you know.
Yeah.
She looks sexy whenever she cut all that weight.
Yeah.
You know.
You liked it when she cuts the weight.
Yeah, like when she cut the weight on it. Yeah. Yes.
The next fight, every one of you guys, I want you guys to lose 20 pounds.
Good. That's good.
I'm deeply shocked. I attribute it to my very stupid nature. Dumb people get surprised often.
Yeah, or they're just oblivious.
Same thing.
Oblivious and surprised are the same.
Okay. Oh, oblivious and dumb. Although I guess if you're oblivious, if you're dumb, you wouldn't really know. Whatever, let's go on with the show. Take over.
Hello, and welcome to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. My name is Matt Grady, and I'm joined here by this distinguished gentleman, Michael Coughlin, from the sunny suburbs of Chicago, Illinois. Do you ever know anybody who says Illinois?
I heard it once from a lady in Denver. I went there.
Were you upset by that?
I was kind of surprised. I was staying at a hostel in the city of Denver, and I had my own room. It's still a hostel. Well, it's like $35 for a night. It's a great deal. And I stayed the shittier. And she goes, "Oh, you're from Illinois." And I'm like sitting there going,
"Yeah,
are you fucking like the one that annoys me is it's Illinois." And some people even here in the state will say Illinois.
And did I say it right?
I think you did.
Okay.
Like that one, I pick up a lot more. Like Illinois is just so like you just don't hear it. And when I did hear it that one time, I go, "Are you fucking for real? Like, how do you fuck up that one?" I understand cities and stuff, but everyone in the world knows you don't say Illinois, so whatever.
Right, and it's not like an accent thing. You're just adding on an extra S that doesn't need to be there.
Exactly. Like the Illinois and Illinois, fine. I understand that's just a regional dialect type of deal, but Illinois, then don't you just hear that and go, "Oh, yeah, I sound like a retard."
That's what I think when people say it that way. This week we're going to talk about UFC 208, several newsworthy comments from UFC President Dana White, Brock Lesnar's retirement from the UFC, the impending return of George St. Pierre, the likelihood of Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor boxing again, some recently announced fights, the return of Fedor Emelianenko, and UFC Fight Night Halifax. If I had to guess, we're not going to get to a lot of stuff this week besides state pronunciations, but we'll see how it goes. I understand there's one person in the world who likes when we talk about stuff, so
me.
We'll see, excluding either one of us. But anyway, so with no further ado, let's get into UFC 208 from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. This card was last Saturday on February 11th. Attendance was 15,268. And the live gate totaled $2.2 million. Overall, this was a pretty lackluster card. I would not encourage you to buy the show on replay or try and find it on Fight Pass. I'm sorry. It was headlined by a title fight that never it was almost like karma kind of with this show. Like UFC kind of got what it deserved by headlining the show with a title fight that never should have been booked in Holly Holm versus Jermaine de Rondamy for their inaugural Women's Featherweight Championship. Obviously, not every UFC show is going to be a winner, and this one was certainly a loser from an entertainment judging and refing standpoint. This was, I don't want to say an abortion, but pretty bad. 9 out of 10 fights went to a decision. 2 fights were canceled the day of or the day before the show. We're not going to get into all of the prelims today because we just don't have time. Instead, I think we'll focus on the pay-per-view portion of the card if that works for you, Mr. Coughlin.
The less said about this, the better.
Okay. In the main event, Rondamy beat Holm by unanimous decision, 48-47 on all 3 scorecards. Not a particularly exciting fight. Kind of, I want to say your standard Holm fight, because she did some clinch work against the cage and kind of tried to close some distance. It wasn't just like point striking. She tried some takedowns and stuff. But what this fight's mostly going to be remembered for were late strikes after the bell from Rondamy in the second, at the end of the second and the end of the third round. Particularly in the second, she really rocked home with two shots after the bell that staggered her, and she kind of stumbled to her corner. The ref didn't really get in between them, and he didn't really give Rondamy that stern of a warning after the second round. Then it happened again in the third. The shots weren't quite as good, but again, it was after the bell, and then Rondamy stuck her tongue out and smiled at home. She didn't really seem like she was feeling that bad about these illegal shots. Quite a few people scored the fight for home, thinking she won the last three rounds, the third, the fourth, and the fifth. Did you score it for home, or did you score it for Rondamy?
I didn't score it.
Okay, if you had to.
Just in the back of my head, I think Durandame did better. I think Holm seemed like she was more on the defensive throughout the fight. I just got the impression, and again, some of this is just unfair, but it seemed like she was fighting scared. Mm. And, you know, she was the one unwilling to engage at times. And it's not fair. You shouldn't bring in preconceived biases. You should judge every fight just what happens in front of you. But when I know that you're a striker and only a striker, and in fact, you're not just a striker, like you have a shitty ground game, and I see you going for takedowns, I start thinking, and especially if you don't get those takedowns, I'm going, okay, you must be losing the standing, because why else are you trying to do this? Like, you know, right. Mirko Krokop tries to take somebody down, you're like, what? But, I mean, overall, yeah, it was a shit fight, and go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, please, please.
Okay, how did you feel about those shots after the bell? Was that Rondamy's fault? Was it the ref's fault? Should Holm have defended herself better after the bell rang? And would you have, penalized Rondamy? Would you have docked her a point after the second infraction after the third round?
It's a good thing I shut up, because I was going to talk about that, but I thought maybe he'll ask and it'll break up the monotony of one man talking. I don't think that... I don't think the ref did anything wrong as far as how he didn't stop the punches from coming. They were close enough to the bell that I'm like, I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. I've never seen her do anything dirty like this before. I kind of like her. I think she seems like a nice person. And I can imagine that, I don't know, I have a very odd standard. But this is not Mike's.
She's like behind the scenes, she's probably like a murderer or, you know.
Probably.
Is a drug dealer, sells drugs to kids or something. We just don't know about it. Just on camera, when you've seen her fight a couple times, she seems like a good chick.
She's foreign and she speaks English. They always get me. You know, and I don't think heat of the moment, all that happens. I don't think Holm needed to do anything different. I mean, her hands are up. She was going to get hit by those punches. If the bell hadn't sounded, she would have got hit by those punches. I don't think she, like, dropped her guard because she heard the bell sound. That all having been said, I do think the referee made a mistake in that I would have taken a point away from Durandame. Maybe after the second round, because even though I don't think it was intentional, the referee does have at his discretion the ability to dock a point if he thinks that an unintentional foul was so detrimental and fight-altering that it's the only way to kind of make things fair. And I think that was probably the case here. Durandame, I think she won the fight, but if Holm hadn't been rocked pretty bad by strikes that she shouldn't have been rocked by, I could have seen her pulling up out maybe another round, or maybe this would have been a draw, which, god damn, that would have been so fucking great if it had been.
So we've got a new women's featherweight champ now in Rondamy. After the fight, Joe Rogan interviews her in the cage and asks her about fighting Cyborg. And Rondamy quickly says she needs surgery on her hand and deflected the question entirely. It didn't seem like she was really interested in fighting Cyborg, who may or may not be getting out of a suspension, which we'll talk about shortly. Did you find that odd and just kind of a waste? Because it was like, shouldn't she have kind of called Cyborg out because, you know, that's the direction you're going, instead of saying my hand hurts and I won't be able to fight for a while?
She's just doing athlete speak. She's not thinking promoting-wise. It's just not in her nature. Plus, she's speaking in a different language. Like, I'm pretty sure most people would think if I ever made the UFC, Mike would probably cut a promo after a fight. But if I was doing it in French, even if I can speak French a little bit, it would be really difficult for me to kind of get that going, especially if I'd just been in a cage fight for half an hour.
You could say CM Punk in French.
Yeah, that's probably true. CM Punk? Maintenant? Votre merde. Yeah, I mean, she could have done more, but who knows? She just won a title, and everybody was booing her, and she's kind of probably not smart anyways, because she's a cage fighter. So, I don't know what they're doing with Cyborg. It's so fucking stupid.
I agree. It's a mess. When this fight was announced, we knew it was a mess. The fight turned out to be a mess. The decision was a mess. The post-fight was a mess. It went kind of the way it deserved to go, if you know what I'm trying to say. Further down the line, Rondamy has actually offered Home a rematch now, in spite of her injured hand that she needs to have surgery on. Saying that she doesn't want to be known as the dirty fighter and will give Home a rematch. To me, I don't want to say she's dodging Cyborg, which you can't blame her. I would dodge Cyborg as well. But it's just kind of lame on her part, I think. And then secondly, on top of Rondamy offering Home a rematch, Home's actually appealing the decision. She's going to the New York State Athletic Commission and saying, I was basically robbed of this fight because I got hit with punches after the bell twice, and Rondamy should have been docked points for that. Do you think she has a case there?
No.
No?
Well, New York is a special state. We're learning. They're kind of Texas 2.0. But as a general rule, athletic commissions don't do that stuff. I mean, that's a referee's decision. We just saw that back in California recently with the, I can't remember who it was, but there was like the knee, and the athletic commission basically said, like, you know, we defer to the referee. That was so close. The referee would be the guy, assuming he's a competent referee, which is iffy, he would be the one in the best position of anybody on earth to determine how damaging those blows were and whether or not they were intentional. And I can't see them overturning it. But then again, they also suspended Tim Kennedy for a while. Kelvin Gastelum. And then he just paid $2,000 and got out of it. So it's a fucking new world.
Okay. What would you do next for Rondamy and Home? Would you run it back? Or, like, what do you do? There's no other fighters in the division in the UFC.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, where do they go from here?
And then go find Marlos Kunin if they can get her and make me happy. Otherwise, I mean, obviously Cyborg is the perfect person to fight next, is who they'd like to fight next. If she's suspended because, you know, she's half man now. Home, I guess. It wasn't even a one-fight division. And we got to try to figure out booking beyond the non-one fight. Like, it's a piece of shit and no one cares. And I don't know, maybe Ronda will go up and fight Durandamé.
Maybe. We'll see. In the semi-main event, Anderson Silva beat Derek Brunson. What is that?
That is... What the hell? Where's the alarm?
I thought this was special Anderson Silva music.
What the... Oh, it was... I set my... that's Sakuraba's theme music. I set it for 10 minutes on my timer to see... And that means we've officially talked about UFC 208 for 10 whole minutes.
Well, we'll get moving.
No, I started it when we started talking about the topic, not the beginning of the show.
Okay. Derek Brunson, Anderson Silva beat Derek Brunson by unanimous decision in a close fight. Scores were 29-28, 29-28, and 30-27. Looking around online, it looked like most people scored it for Brunson, who landed more shots, got a couple takedowns, and was about as aggressive as Silva was. After the fight, Brunson said he felt he was robbed. Who did you have winning this fight?
Again, just like a 30,000 feet kind of view, Anderson.
Okay, you did.
And not that I really thought he won it. I thought, you know, in my world, it's a draw. But I thought he would win the judges' decision. I can see where Brunson would get the first and third rounds.
Sure.
But again, judges, I really believe this. I don't think they judge on number of strikes and this and that. They judge on moments, and particularly moments that stand out in their mind. And Anderson spent so much of the fight looking like he was in control. He was doing capoeira. He was dancing. Yep. He was goofing around. He looked like the guy that thought this whole thing was a joke, and he was so much better than that. And I think that sways close rounds. And they were all basically close rounds. Nobody did anything really damaging. Probably the most damaging shots of all were in the end of the first when Brunson hit a couple uppercuts. But, again, Silva seemed to be okay with that. So I think just Silva's overall demeanor won him the fight. His demeanor and his reputation, they preceded him, and it got him the victory.
Interestingly, this might be the first show I've ever heard of where two different fighters are appealing the decisions. Brunson's manager, one of my favorite managers, Ali Abdelaziz, told Fox Sports on Wednesday that the middleweight is expected to file an appeal this week through his attorney, Craig Zimmerman. According to Abdelaziz, Brunson's appeal will take umbrage with the judges who scored the fight in favor of Silva after three rounds at UFC 208. When the fight ended, Brunson had outstruck Silva by a total of 54-43 in significant strikes and 118-54 in total strikes, according to Fight Metric. So Brunson's not happy, obviously, with the decision.
They're going to get overturned over, like, a difference of 10 significant strikes. Fuck off.
Right. Well, the other thing is, like, Brunson could outstrike, like, a score of 29-28. There's so many different variables and ways that could go. Like, maybe Brunson outstruck Silva by 20 shots in one round and won his round 10-9, and then Silva outstruck Brunson the other two by 10. If you go with that criteria that he's arguing, these strikes, and are they significant? How much damage did they do? That sort of thing. Just because you lost the decision when you had more strikes doesn't mean anything, really.
I mean, shit, by that logic, Chael Sonnen beat Anderson Silva the first time they fought. You know, yeah, exactly. It's just, or, you know, Melvin Manhoff and Robbie Lawler. He only hit one big punch. Yeah, but it knocked you out. Like, these things just happen. It's a fight. It was a close fight. If you want, I feel bad for Brunson in that I can understand why he thinks he got screwed. No doubt. If I was in his shoes, I would think I got screwed too. Every fighter thinks that their punches hurt times 1,000 and nothing ever hurts them at all. That's just how every fighter thinks. But I feel bad for him because Ali is clearly giving him, I think, bad advice, and he's going to spend money on an attorney to file an appeal that's not going to be successful. He'll probably spend minimum of $5,000 on that shit. What a waste of money.
I mean, this is a quote directly from Brunson, well, through me, but it definitely was a robbery. Here's what I'll say to the judges. You guys love Anderson Silva. You guys are in awe of Anderson Silva. You didn't show up tonight and do your job. What you did was show up to watch the fight. You didn't score the fight. I watched with Joe Rogan and Daniel Cormier commentating on the fight, and they made a valid point that every time Anderson moved, the crowd went crazy. It's Anderson Silva. I got caught up in that. The judges got caught up in that. So,
even he's admitting what I just pretty much
diagnosed. Yeah,
it's just, he's a whiner. Dude, you got to fight Anderson, and are you going to be really proud of squeaking by a 42-year-old guy with a broken chin? Like, this is where you're gonna mount your cross on this hill or whatever? Fuck off.
Yeah, I'm with you. Where do you think Anderson goes from here? Is there a fight for him? I mean,
George St. Pierre.
Yeah, maybe.
That to me is the only real fight. Although, and I think we talked about it. I don't know if we did. No, we didn't talk about it. Because I kind of realized this during the show, and I think I wrote about it. But this show, I felt like Anderson Silva added to his legacy almost more than anything else. Because he's made the successful transition from the greatest fighter ever. And now he's like this Bruce Lee type of mythical figure who's, you know, I just want to test myself, and it doesn't matter if I win or lose. I just want to see how I can do, and I'm trying new things. And because he's older, but he's still got some of those old skills, like everything he's doing, it's like, huh, is he going to actually pull this off? Is he going to really be unique? And it's kind of like your really great career renaissance. It's kind of the only thing you can have when you're an established older fighter. For his health, he should stop now, but if he's not going to stop, I think Anderson just, again, if he's willing to fight Derek Brunson, I think he'll literally fight anyone. And, George St. Pierre is the biggest money fight. And after that, I don't know, if I'm the UFC, I try to find a really shitty middleweight to feed him and then do a Bisping fight. He'd have two in a row. He came close to beating Bisping, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Also on the main card, Jacare submitted Tim Bosch with a Kimura in the first. Jacare looked great, took Bosch down, and finished him quickly. Glover Teixeira beat Jared Cannonier by unanimous decision, 30-26 on all three cards. Teixeira basically took him down and wrestled him. Very boring. I fell asleep during it. And then in the opener, Dustin Poirier beat Jim Miller by majority decision, 28-28, 30-27, 29-28. Some weird scorecards there, but that was the best fight on the show. Probably the only thing worth watching. Poirier's leg was really screwed up at the end of the fight from some Miller like calf kicks. It was a great fight. If you're going to watch anything on the card, I would say watch that.
Yeah, it's funny because when I watch it, there was a couple of moments where it was, like, really, really great. I'm like, holy shit. But when the show was over, I completely forgot it even existed. It was there, and it was gone, and it was great while it happened. But as soon as it was done, it's like drinking a lot of alcohol. It's really fun in the moment, and then tomorrow morning, well, if you're lucky, you don't remember it. But other than that, yeah, Jacare was the only guy in the whole card that I thought did anything for his stock. He looked like... I mean, Tim Boach we talked about, and on the show, you know, people know Tim Boach. He's got 20-plus fights in the fucking UFC or whatever. Like, that's a ton of fights. And, you know, Jacare made him look like he was nothing. And he did exactly what you would expect Jacare to do, and it just reinforces how dangerous he is when he can get it to where he excels. So he's the only guy that looked good. Everybody else pretty much looked like shit. And I hope most of them never get to fight again, including the title fight. It should just be on the untelevised portion that they air even before Fight Pass, which doesn't exist yet, but it should, just for the Women's Featherweight Championship.
The one other thing we should note, we talked about this a lot last week, I think. Prior to this show, Ian McCall was pulled from the show due to illness. The rumor was it had to do with his weight cut. He wasn't feeling well Friday night, and he was pulled from the show. This is his fifth canceled fight in a row within, like, you know, a couple days of the show, whether his opponent gets hurt or his opponent's sick or he's sick or whatever. But this is five fights in a row. He hasn't fought in a couple years now. What does this all mean? Is there a higher power? What's going on?
We're going to find out. Basically, if there is, if God is actually out there and he cares about cage fighters, which he probably doesn't, well, he does, like, he cares about all of us, but no more than anyone else, because he's a just God. I'm going to laugh. It'll be a horrible thing to laugh at, but if Ian McCall finally gets into the cage and he gets punched once and dies, I'm going to go, oh my gosh, the universe was doing everything it could to prevent this moment from happening, but just like in, like, Final Destination or whatever, death will eventually find you. I mean, damn, if this isn't a sign that you got to do something else in life, I don't know what has. Nobody else gets this many fights canceled this close. I mean, yeah, guys get fights pulled on them. Guys pull out of fights. People duck fighters. Sure. Nobody has this ever happened. I mean, holy shit. Guys fighting in one-night tournaments don't have this many opponents pull out. This is crazy.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like this ever. Bottom line, UFC 208, not a good show.
One of the worst shows they've done in one of the worst pay-per-views I can recall, and one of the worst shows probably in UFC history. Just top to bottom, the undercard sucked. Everything sucked. It was just, and it just got worse and worse as it went on.
I mean, even Dana White said this was not one of our better events. I always feel
one of the bonuses.
Yeah, well, there were no finishes. It's hard when there's only one finish.
Usually they give out, you know, the two fight of the night and then two other performance bonuses. He only gave out one.
Yeah.
That's saying a lot there. And Dana White's like, fuck you. None of you deserve an extra $50,000. None of you. Fuck off.
He literally said, I always feel like that if we come into a place, you're going to have at least a few good fights that are going to get you up out of your seat. We didn't have any of those. And then he corrected himself and mentioned Poirier and Miller. But, he was not a fan of this show either.
It sucked. It happened. On paper, it didn't look strong. But on paper, a lot of shows don't always look strong, and they deliver. And strong shows don't deliver. So, it's just...
It's like all sports. I mean, that's what sports are. It's like the Super Bowl.
And, I think it's a huge credit to the UFC that they put on a pay-per-view like this, and it stands out as an anomaly. This is what we saw on Saturday night, that is what basically every big boxing pay-per-view has been for decades.
Right.
So, UFC fans, we get, 13 great pay-per-views a year, one bad one. I'll take those odds.
Sure, me too. Speaking of White, he was making media rounds leading up to UFC 208 and after the show, kind of, hyping the show and giving quite a few interviews. He did that ESPN, car wash deal where he goes through all those shows. But he made some news
last
weekend.
Did they
really
say car wash?
Yeah, that's what they call it. I don't know why it's called that.
When you said that first time, I'm like, is there a fucking ESPN show in a car wash now?
They do... First Take, and then they go to the next one, and Dan Le Batard.
It's a junket, yeah.
Yeah, but they call it the car wash. I don't know why. Anyway, he made some news in several of these interviews, and I figured we should get your take on what Dana said. First, in regards to Cyborg, Dana told Brett Okamoto this. It's actually looking really good now. Apparently the three medical conditions she has is what this medicine is used for. It's looking really good. It was looking bad for a minute, but now it's looking better. We're in a good place. So essentially it looks like Cyborg is going to get a retroactive therapeutic use exemption for whatever that diuretic she was taking was. What do you think of that?
It doesn't look good, optic-wise, it doesn't look good. But given that we've seen the UFC literally suspend Jon Jones 2 days before the biggest show they were putting on, they've had Brock Lesnar get popped, they've had every guy possible that would be a bad failure happen except for Conor and Ronda. So,
You got to think she's going to get suspended at least for 6 months. There's going to be some sort of punishment. She was taking an illegal substance without permission and got popped for it by USADA. That's the whole point of USADA and drug testing, is to catch people taking drugs they're not supposed to be taking. And she got popped, but she's going to say she got it from a doctor and get a doctor's note after the fact. It's she should have done that before. It's everybody knows this. And why are they jumping through hoops for her? I get that they're desperate for main events and name fighters and people who can draw. I get that, but to me,
I don't think they're jumping through hoops for her. I think that the USADA protocols are just more and more looks. It's very clear that they are completely independent of the UFC. The way Dana talks about it is actually you would not expect a commissioner of any league to ever say things like that. They're always kind of quiet and deferential because in every other sport, the commissioner, the head of the league, is also the one who's kind of administering the tests. The UFC, Dana just, in his world, and does not see himself as the guy who's connected in any way to USADA. He just completely defers to them. And with that being the case, Cyborg's fighting it. I don't think USADA is doing anything for her. I think she should get punished. I think if USADA can find it in their heart to give people 9 months for taking something when USADA admits, no, you didn't even know what you were taking, then knowingly taking something, even if you do it innocently and under doctor's care without checking it ahead of time, especially when you're a Cyborg, you've popped before. This isn't the first time for you, and you're just – maybe it's not fair, but you're a fucking steroid user. I can just look at you. You have a fucking dick bigger than mine. You're more man than I could ever be. You're a cheater, and everyone knows it. So I would just give her – I hate the two-year thing. I think it's really severe, but if anyone should get 2 years, it's her. She's failed before. She blatantly looks like she's cheating, and – cheating amongst women is way worse than even cheating amongst men. I'd give her 2 years and tell her to fuck off. fucking cheater. She's going to kill someone before anybody else does in the sport. Besides the other people have already died.
I agree with you. I mean, I don't understand it. It's like, you could easily get a note from, I'm saying a doctor's note, like it's a little kid out from school or something, but you could get something in writing from a doctor after the fact and say you were taking it for whatever reason. There's marked doctors out there all over the place, especially from Brazil of all places. It's just crazy. But whatever. We'll see what happens and what the logic is behind it, and we'll be able to look at it better then. Granted, I'm jumping to a conclusion, but we'll see.
The only way that she's innocent, and this is a possibility, is that she's just really stupid and doesn't know what's going on, which I completely believe. Like, sure. I know a lot of Brazilian people, no offense, but they're fighters and trainers and all this. Like, they're not educated. A lot of I've seen people be like, oh, I just took this guy. He said I should take it to make me feel better. It's like, are you – what? No, don't just take something. And I could see her doctor – maybe if her doctor has no idea, like, the actual regulations of WADA. If you're just a regular doctor and someone with cyborg issues come in, I'm sure her endocrine system is completely fucked because she's a cheater. I could see some doctor being like, shit, this is what you need to take. Take it and go ahead. And like, not even considering the ramifications – sure. Of her athletic career. But again, she's a cheater. She's a known cheater. She's failed before. She's clearly using shit. And in her job, like the only thing, like everybody's a fighter knows, you got to ask your doctor or tell your doctor, like, is this okay? Everybody knows. Either your doctor should know or your manager. There's like so many people involved in a fighter of her caliber for this to say, oopsie. Ooh, I didn't see that coming. I don't know if you're Ed Soares, whoever her manager is. I assume it's Ed Soares because he's Brazilian. Oh, no, it's Tito. That's right, it's Tito.
I think they broke up. That's right.
Gabby Garcia is represented by Tito, no, because Ed Soares ripped her bad in public. Speaking of steroid users, so whatever. Fuck you, Cyborg, you cheater.
Dana also talked a bit about Tyron Woodley and Woodley's claims of racism and poor treatment from UFC management. White said the following: the thing is with Tyron, he's a smart guy, he's a good-looking kid, he's explosive, he's got knockout power, but he's a bit of a drama queen. Do you think that's an apt description of Woodley?
That is so perfectly on the nose, and it's amazing that Dana White, of all people, said it, because I always expect his stuff to be a little over the top, which makes me wonder if my opinion of Woodley's over the top, but yeah, that's Woodley. He's inventing these weird scenarios in his head where he's some sort of victim, and the truth is he's kind of historically been boring, and again, I've talked about this a lot. He's just started to build his name. I don't know if he lives in some fantasy land where, oh, I got the title, I get a million pay-per-view buys every time. I mean, I know that he trains at Rufus Sport here. And did nobody ever just say to you, dude, like, Conor McGregor didn't draw in his first two or three fights? Actually, pretty much did. But most guys take time, you know. Yeah. Anderson Silva took years to become a draw. You got to go out there and do something, and especially if you're not Conor McGregor or Ronda Rousey. If you can't talk shit, if you don't have nice tits, you got to be a hell of a fighter for a long time. So it's just whatever. And by the way, keep playing the race card. Always really works. Most people would look at anybody making millions of dollars and go, yeah, racism's really holding you back. And as you've noted in the past many times, nothing gets over better with people than saying, hey, you should like me. If you don't, you're a racist. Yeah, that's going to draw people to your side. Ask Hillary Clinton how that one worked against Trump. Boom, boom. Yeah.
Well, it's funny, too, because Dana even mentioned McGregor, and he said, I'm going to quote him again, lots of quotes this week, but the way that he's talking about Woodley here, the way that he's talking about being treated too, and I think he means the fans, when a fight is made and Conor McGregor is a perfect example, McGregor has that fight anybody, anywhere attitude, but doesn't just have the attitude, he lives it. I've stood in front of him on 10 days' notice, and his opponent falls out, and he doesn't care. He doesn't care at all. Bring them all in. I'm better than everyone. I'm the man. I'm the guy. If Woodley had that attitude, Woodley would be a massive star. But he does these things where he'll say on Instagram where the fans know who's next, who's supposed to fight next, and he'll go on social media and go, I'm not fighting him. I don't want to fight him. I think I want to fight this guy. And that's not what people want to hear. People don't want to hear that. So
Dana's wrong on that. I mean, Woodley did and does, I think, have that reputation. And Connor, to his credit, does fight anyone, anywhere, anytime, pretty much. I mean, Woodley just sit out for a year and a half. But that's not why people like Connor McGregor. If that was the case, like if the attitude of I'll fight anyone, anywhere made you a big star, Donald Cerrone would be doing 10 million pay-per-view buys. So there's a lot more at stake. I mean, we've seen plenty. George St. Pierre has been a huge draw throughout his career, and he's not been an anywhere, anytime guy. He's always been a very meticulous fight like 2 times a year. Everything's planned out. So it has nothing to do with how that kind of attitude. It has everything to do with your personality and charisma. And I think Woodley will, if he keeps winning, I think he will be okay. He's a good fighter. He's got a good look. And whether I, even though I strongly disagree with a lot of the shit he's saying, at least he's saying something. And I think over time that stuff does turn around. And, you know, worst case scenario, it becomes like a Floyd Mayweather type where people love to hate him. And as long as, again, as long as you keep winning and you're not a midget, you're going to eventually draw. Sorry,
probably. Third, Dana said that the UFC will not be re-signing light heavyweight prospect Misha Cirkunov. Granted, a lot of people don't know this guy, but he's the 10th ranked light heavyweight in the world right now. And I think he's like 29. So he's on the younger scale for light heavyweights. He's 4-0 in the UFC. And White said, I met with Misha and his wife and good people and everything else, but he ended up really flaking out on his deal. So I'm not interested. I'm done. He knows I'm done. And I made it very clear I'm done. Like, I'm even surprised White met with Cirkunov and his wife about re-signing. Like, I heard that. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Dana White is, like, meeting with, like, maybe whatever. It didn't go well with Shelby, and White's like, all right, I'll fix it. I'll get in there. We'll get a deal done. But what the hell, like, where's Cirkunov going to go and get paid? Like, he's a couple fights, probably 3 fights away from a title fight if he can win 3 fights in a row against top 10 guys because light heavyweight's so thin. But, like, what's he going to do, go to Bellator and fight, like, Phil Davis? Like, I don't get what he's thinking and what he's trying to push for and how hard he's pushing at this point in his career when literally 5,000 people in the country know who he is.
If that. I mean, like, when I first heard the name, I'm like, I know that name, don't I? And I was like, oh, he's a top 10 light heavyweight on the planet. And, of course, as I saw on Saturday night, and my brother and I were watching it, and we started like laughing for a number of reasons, but in particular, the idea that Shogun Hua was ranked number 6. Like,
right.
What the I thought he was like retired. Like, this is absurd. Like, Rashad Evans was in the top 10 for a long time, and he's not even allowed to fight in half the states. So, right. Top 10. And you got a weird name, and you're kind of awkward looking, and you're not that attractive, and you're a fucking Russian. You're not gonna. I don't know what he did, but whatever Dana says doesn't matter. Dana, this is a typical Dana. Just whatever I did, blah 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 blah. I agree with you. I think the fact that Dana had dinner with the guy is the most shocking thing of all. Because.
Right.
I'm surprised Dana knows who he is. Like, all the stuff's going on in this world, dealing with the bullshit of Stephen A. Smith and his lies on ESPN, and he's got time to have dinner with this. Like, Dana can't have dinner with everybody in the company. He's got, like, 500 fighters under contract. He's having dinner with this jackass there in Toronto or something. Cirkunov should have been happy if Dana paid for his dinner. That's enough of a bonus for you.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't get what he's thinking. Like, he's not somebody who's in a power position where he can push and get what he wants. It's like, you know what? We're not going to pay you that. This is our final offer. Take it or leave it. And he's like, I don't know. Well, see ya. I got other shit I got to take care of. Maybe that's how it sounds like it went to me.
It could be a Russian thing. like, it could be one of those, Russians are stupid people by nature.
He's and actually Canadian.
Sorry. Somehow I knew he was Canadian, but I thought he was, like, from Russia, like an immigrant.
It said, on, you know, that great, awesome site, Wikipedia, it lists his residence as Toronto, his nationality as Latvian and Canadian, and his ethnicity as Russian.
There's a
lot going on.
He's an immigrant. Look, he's a foreigner. He's a dirty foreigner coming over here to take our jobs away from the hardworking Canadians. Screw you, Misha Tsirkinov. You got the same kind of name that nobody wants to pronounce, and we already have enough people with unpronounceable names, and so one of them is going to probably beat the shit out of the biggest fighter in UFC history. So go enjoy Bellator. You'll probably run some shows in Russia and get corrupt judging in your favor.
Finally, Dana also said things were all good with George St. Pierre. That was several days ago. Then earlier today, Ariel Helwani...
No, on halfcredit.com. We don't care other people.
Sorry. Some guy reported that GSP and the UFC have agreed to terms and are very close to finalizing a new contract. Again... UFC's got to make money. This is an ongoing thing. We've talked about WME, IMG has $2 billion in debt and interest they got to pay off. For years, Dana's saying GSP doesn't want to fight. He's never going to fight again. Now Connor's talking about boxing. Ronda's out. John Jones is out. They've got nobody. They have no main eventers. They've got nobody who can do 300,000 buys under the best circumstances. So they're going to GSP. It's like kind of predictable and not surprising on my end. So it seems like it sounds like they're going to be able to work out a deal. So the question is, if they can work out a deal, who's GSP going to fight next?
Well, first of all, I want to talk about him getting a deal in general, which good for him. Like, really, when you look at what happened, like, it was kind of assumed that the big issue was he had existing sponsorship deals with Under Armour. He's going to get fucked because of the Reebok deal, and he right. wanted to get compensated, and the UFC is playing hardball. But if they came around and are giving him what he wants, they're only doing that if they think they can still make a profit off of him. They're not going to use GSP as a loss leader.
Right.
That just tells you that they were underpaying him before. And so mm-hmm. good for him for getting as much as he can from them. I don't think the UFC should ever go in the red on anybody, but they shouldn't go too much in the black. So good for GSP. As far as his first fight back, we mentioned Anderson Silva before, and the other guy, and I wrote about this, is Conor McGregor. You know, Conor, that was you had written about that as a great fight for UFC 200. They said that he would be returning in the third quarter of 2017, and I checked and did the math, and that's like July, August, and September. I had to actually do the math. I'm like, what the fuck is the third quarter? Like, in my brain, I'm like, that's like October, November, right? Yeah, December is the last quarter. I have like a really weird calendar in my head. So I'm like, huh, if he comes back in July or maybe August, that lines up very perfectly with Conor McGregor's layoff. It would be a huge – I mean, it would be the one fight that Conor would look at and go, well, fuck this Floyd Mayweather stuff. Like, I'm going to do 2 million buys at least with George St. Pierre – and I might beat him. And if I do, I'm like the greatest legend who ever lived. You know, two division champion, beat the greatest champion at the third division. Like, that's I think it's a bad matchup for Conor. But if you're ever going to fight George St. Pierre, it's when he's been off for almost 4 years. So I think it's Conor or Anderson, or in the distant third, in my opinion, would be the winner of Woodley and Wonderboy.
Okay.
Or Nick. Yeah. Nick's always a possibility. If George is looking for, like, easy money.
Well, I mean, it'd be a good return fight. He's been off for 3 years. Nick's been off a long time. Nick would take that fight. You would think, like, everybody who's turned down, like, you don't turn down GSP. There's just too much money on the line. I mean, we'll see how it goes. I mean, they've got the feud. I could see him going with Diaz. Diaz doesn't have a fight. He's been a pain in the ass. It makes sense. GSP would probably see it as a fight that he could win just based on the wrestling again. So yeah, if I had to pick one that'll happen, I would say GSP and Nick. with the return of GSP imminent, we should, on the other hand, mention that a huge star in MMA has retired. How are you going to remember the career of James Muntasri? Just kidding. Brock Lesnar has retired again.
Wait, did Muntasri retire?
Yes.
Oh,
I didn't hear about that. It was huge news.
Well, I was collecting my thoughts because I just remember I was trying to think of the lyrics to that Asia song when the moon and the sky or whatever they sing at the end of 40-Year-Old Virgin. I'm like, isn't there something about moon in there? I'm just gonna remember this career was defined by a spoon jumping over him.
Okay, gotcha. I thought you were just pausing because you didn't like my joke.
No, I was pausing because I was trying to think of a joke.
Anyway, Brock Lesnar was suspended a year for taking, the female fertility pills for some reason, has said he's retired, not going to fight again. This kind of coincides perfectly with him being able to get back onto whatever medication he was on previously, just in time to get ready for WrestleMania. Any thoughts on Brock? I mean, will he ever fight again? They say he's going to get back into USADA for like 5 months now based on the failure and the timing of everything. Is he done with MMA forever?
Yeah.
You think?
To me, it's really comes down to age. I think he's just too old, but that all said, I think it'd be very, you kind of said it there where Brock just says, I'm retired, and therefore he's out of the program. He can juice up for Mania and do whatever he wants to, have his match with Goldberg. And then if he wants to after that, he can be like, oh, by the way, I've unretired. And it's going to probably take him 4 to 5 months anyways to get in really good fight shape to begin with. So then again, I don't know if he can actually do it without drugs. So, I mean, it is heavyweight. He could go out there and get on a run of two and win the title, but I would bet against it happening just because of his age. But, I mean, stranger things have happened.
Mm-hmm.
But still, that seems like a lot of work for Brock to do. Like, Brock is all about maximizing your return on investment, with the investment being your time. And for him to take that much time off and get back into the game, I mean, I know he's a competitor. He obviously came back. He fought a great fighter, Mark Hunt, and beat him. But, I don't know, go out there in WWE and, I mean, fuck, the dude's fucking a genius right now. He's just going out there and losing in a minute to Goldberg and getting paid the same. And all the while people are like, look at him. What a team player. He's really, really putting the guy over. He's really making things happen. I'm sitting there going, the dude has worked like 5 minutes in the past like 9 months and he's probably made like $2 million. He's smarter than everyone. And then he'll go at Mania, probably beat Goldberg and beat an even bigger star. So, yeah.
Right, on top of it, he just doesn't really care. Like, it's not like, 15 years ago when he was in his prime in WWE and he didn't really understand the business and people were in his ear and saying, you know what, you shouldn't put this guy over. He doesn't even care. He's a great performer. He has good matches, whatever. But he doesn't care if they ask him to do a job at this point. You know what I mean?
I think he's realized that Paul Heyman knows what he's doing. He just listens to Paul. And he knows that Paul won't screw him. Paul Heyman wouldn't book him poorly. And, they do him just right. Like, I wasn't really old enough to truly appreciate Andre the Giant in his prime. But it sounds like they're kind of using him in the Andre role where, he comes in here and there. He does a bit of a program, and then he just leaves. But every time he comes back, you just know this is the scariest dude in the world, and you got to watch out for him. And, he's one of, like, the two or three people in the entirety of pro wrestling that, like, if I know they're going to do something, I'll be like, oh, I want to see that.
Sure.
So, yeah, good for him.
There was a third retirement today as well. I'm not sure if you heard about this one. The nurse, Felipe Nover, has retired as well.
Really? Oh. Well, I'm sure now he's retired, he has more time to dedicate to his hobby of mixed martial arts. So good for him.
Who would have thought Felipe Nover would be retired before Anderson Silva? Definitely not Dana White.
Well, yeah. Usually when you're the next something, you don't retire before the first something. Although, you know what? That makes him the new Coke of MMA, gone before the old one ever left.
Yeah, Dana White's going to take shit for that until the day he dies, I think.
He said that about so many different people. There's been like at least two or three people like this. Like this guy's got all the chance to be Anderson Silva, and then they just blow up completely.
David Branch is signed with the UFC officially now. Granted, a lot of people don't care about Branch. He was kind of a washout from the UFC before. I think he was like 2-2, but he is on a 10-0 run in World Series of Fighting. Was their middleweight champ and light heavyweight champ. Do you think he makes any waves in the UFC, or is he just big fish in a small pond?
I think he's just an average guy. I'd have him fight Derek Brunson. Like, the name's okay. In my head. I'm like, yeah, they'd probably match up. It'd be a test for Brunson. It'd be a test for him. So, I mean, I don't know. It's David Branch. He's fine. I think that the World Series of Fighting, for all their many, many flaws, did have a decent number of fighters, and the competition was about as good as you could expect. Like, Bellator, I think, in some respects, has weaker competition because they have more flashy names like Tito and shit. But, you know, again, 10-0 in MMA at almost any level, that's a hell of a run. Most guys get knocked out just slipping on tile once. It's good, you know, I'm sure he'll do, again, top 15-ish in the UFC, maybe bottom of the top 10 at best, but he ain't going anywhere super special. Then again, Michael Bisping's also champion. So the middleweight division is very weird right now, but that big four or big five, if you count Bisping, or big six, if you count Musasi, those guys are really, really fucking good. I think they're on a totally different level than David Branch.
I agree. Mike Goldberg is in talks with Bellator about joining their announced team. Would you like to see Goldberg do some commentating with Bellator?
Actually, no.
Okay.
It's not even a knock on Goldberg so much. Again, I think him and Rogan are the greatest commentary team of all time. But I think that the Bellator team with Wheelock and
Grandy.
Yeah, are really, really good. Like, they've got an excellent team. I think they gel very well. They sound very professional. I think that they might be the best announcing duo in MMA right now, actually.
I think it's Jimmy Smith and Grandy.
Yeah,
Jimmy Smith and Grandy. Yeah. So, news also broke this week that UFC is trying to cut costs by no longer sending fight tapes to MMA trainers and cutting back on fighters' entrance music like Metallica. Is UFC being too cheap here? Or is this a good way to save a couple bucks by not having to mail out VHS tapes?
That's the fucking dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Have you heard? Did you hear about that?
I did not hear about that until just now.
Yeah, so...
All you have to do is give them fucking $8 a month for a Fight Pass subscription, and then they can watch every fight that exists.
Well, that's what they're saying. They can watch Fight Pass instead of mailing them out these tapes of fighters. But several trainers came out and said, like, what the hell? Now we got to go get Fight Pass and pay for it. Like, I guess not everybody who works for UFC gets Fight Pass for free, and technically these trainers don't work for the UFC anyway, the coaches at these gyms.
They should just have it because they're fight fans, but no.
I agree.
It's a dumb thing to cut because of the optics. It looks
right.
It just looks really cheap. I can't imagine it costs that much. You just have some dipshit intern put together this stuff. Some guy like me just does it for fun. What was the other one that they cut? The
entrance music. Yeah, there must be like rights issues, obviously, that they got to pay for this music. I mean, a lot of shows, when they replay the fights, they'll have dubbed in music.
Right.
WWE's done that for years with, you know, ECW shows or whatever. They don't have the rights to the music, so they dub in some other stuff that they pay less money for. It might have been Carla Esparza,
yeah, she got
who's banned, complaining about it. Yeah.
And you know what? When it comes to the music, there's a dual license, and I've noticed the UFC lately seems to have had the more all-encompassing license, because I've noticed on Fight Pass, like, some of the shows, the cards, will have the original entrance music, because it's recognizable name music. Otherwise, what they do is every arena has its own individual license, and it's far, far cheaper than having a license for pay-per-view. And so they've always just used that license, and then they just dub it over on the replay, and nobody cares. Everything's been paid for. But it could just be somebody looked at it and did a proper audit of the company. And again, I think the company probably needed to be audited. And it seems like it's cutting corners for no reason. But somebody says, we're paying Carlos Esparza $10,000 total, but we're going to also spend $1,500 on her entrance music. That doesn't make any sense. Unless you're drawing at a certain level, you're not going to get your mainstream Metallica or something like that. Go find John Fogerty's B-sides and be happy with that.
Fair enough. That really seems Carlos Esparza's style. Mayweather, Floyd Mayweather Jr., that is, and Conor McGregor, boxing is back in the news again. I don't really want to talk about this, but it's news, so I guess we should. Mayweather told Stephen A. Smith that the fight is very, very close to being worked out, and that reputable paper from Ireland called the Irish Sun reported that McGregor was headed to Vegas to finalize the deal. Both guys are claiming they want $100 million for the fight, and apparently things are going swimmingly well. The UFC is obviously going to have something to say about this. What do you think about it?
I think that journalists are stupid.
Some, sure.
Like, the Irish Sun, first of all, assuming it's related to the Sun in England, as a Liverpool fan, fuck the Sun. You're an evil, horrible newspaper that should be banned from forever. But, you know, fine. Regular newspaper people, whatever, news people paper, I don't know. They're easily conned. They don't understand fight game talk and shit like that. But Stephen A. Smith, I mean, come on, dude. Like, you're in this business, and I know that Floyd Mayweather Jr. is a close personal friend of yours or some shit like that, you hack. But you're either a genuinely dishonest liar or too stupid to be on television. Those are the only options. You're not going to do it. Fucking Max Kellerman was talking about it, too. Like, and I don't know, maybe he's being sarcastic. He's like, you know, if Stephen A. says it's going to happen. Like, this morning I got to go to the office later than normal, and I watched a little ESPN, and afterwards I'm, like, shaking with fury. I'm like, you fucking moron. Just fucking stop it. This is not going to happen for so many tens of millions of reasons, hundreds of millions of reasons, and plus the very bare fact that as bad as athletic commissions are, the idea of having a guy who's never had a professional boxing match in his life take on a guy who is clearly the greatest fighter on the planet and one of the greatest of all time, that is absurd. That is dangerous. That is the equivalent of having a guy who's really good in Little League go up against a prime Pedro Martinez. Like, that's just stupid. Nobody would expect it to work. It's insane. This is not going to happen. Floyd is old. He doesn't care. He doesn't want to fight. Conor is just keeping his name in the news, and then he's going to go out and he's going to fight George St. Pierre, do a whole bunch of money that way. This is stupid. I hate everybody involved with this. I hope they all die in a plane crash, and I hope that their Irish soil is cursed with it, and that Conor's child or children, if you believe Eddie Alvarez, develops some sort of horrible tumor in their head that doesn't kill them but leaves them kind of ugly and deformed for the rest of their life.
The real issue, obviously, if this was something they were truly attempting to do, is the UFC. McGregor's under contract to the UFC. He can't box. He's got a contract. People say there's like a loophole with the Ali Act. That's why he got this boxing license. The NSAC, or I guess the NAC now, is saying that there have been overtures to them about the fight, and McGregor's going to try and get licensed as a boxer in Nevada. So there is, I don't want to say there's some smoke, there's certainly not fire, but there's some reasons that this keeps getting put into the press. There are overtures by both sides where they're making it like they want this fight to happen. For all I know, Conor's kind of crazy. He might want it to happen and want to get, you know, a $50 million+ payday. I could see him being willing to do that and probably, you know, getting destroyed by Mayweather in the process just to get that payday, and then he could go back to the UFC. Or maybe he makes so much money that fight, he never fights again and he just goes away. I don't know long-term what his motives are and what he wants to do. So, I mean, I can see why people fall for it. I don't think the fight will ever happen. And people ask me, do I think it's going to happen? I'm like, no. McGregor's never boxed in his life, and he's got a contract with the UFC, and they're not going to let him fight unless they get a huge cut of it. Mayweather's not going to give the UFC a huge cut of the fight, and McGregor's not going to want to give the UFC a huge cut of the fight. So it's not going to happen.
The way you have to look at it is, if the UFC is going to allow this to happen, they're going to have to be, at a minimum, a one-third partner in any profits. Maybe from their standpoint, half, but we'll just say one-third. And the only way that they would ever get to that point is basically if Conor challenged his contract in court and it looked very, very likely the UFC was going to lose and they don't want to open up that Pandora's box. And so they say, okay, Conor, we will grant you permission as long as you don't go forward and end up making it so that all of our fighters can box whenever they want. But even that, it's just, there's a lot of money to be made. I know it's one of those things where if you just pretend that that's the end of the story, that there's a ton of money there. But especially if you're the UFC, this is bad publicity. This is the kind of thing that does no benefit for you. Well, I guess in theory, Conor knocked him out. Okay, fine. But boxing's not going to really benefit. It's not going to become more popular. All this does is bring the UFC down. So it's two camps of drama queens who like attention, and that's what it is. So fuck them both. That's the story of this show. Fuck everyone.
There's some upcoming fights have been announced recently. Just tell me your interest level on any of these. Will Brooks versus Charles Oliveira at UFC 210 on April 8th.
Moderate interest.
Who would you pick?
Will Brooks, because he's bigger and not a flake, and so I always pick the guy who's more likely to perform, and I think
fair
that's
enough.
Will Brooks, but if they're both of their best, Oliveira.
Rose Namajunas versus Michelle Waterson on UFC on Fox on April 15th.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Rose. I think she's a more well-rounded fighter, and in particular, she's just bigger. I think that's going to be the main difference here.
I agree.
And she's younger. Not as attractive, but kind of attractive, and I like the Dyke haircut.
Cub, how do you feel about Cub Swanson's haircut?
He's got a haircut like me, kind of.
He's going to be in a main event for a fight night card on April 22nd against Artem Lobov. I don't understand what that fight is, because there's two ways you could look at it. Lobov is a training partner of Conor McGregor. He was on The Ultimate Fighter. McGregor was hugging him all the time. They're good friends. That's fine. But he's in a main event, which is good. It gives him some name value. But he's not a great fighter. I think he's just over like 500. I think he's 13-12 career record. And he's in the main event of this fight night card against Cub Swanson, who just came off like the biggest, most exciting fight in the history of the UFC, beating Duho Choi. And now he's got Artem Lobov, who most people don't even know. This is just a really weird match, and I don't know if they're feeding Lobov to the sharks here or they see it as they're giving him a main event and an opportunity to really move up the ranks.
Do you know where that show is located?
No, but I can find out.
Because if it's in Ireland, I understand it.
It's not. Okay. It's like in the middle of the country, I remember.
One of us flyover state people. I see how it is.
It was something like Kansas or something. It was something
That's
weird.
That's a flyover state, is Kansas.
No, I know, but Nashville.
Yeah, that's fly. Well, that's just dumb, Hicks. The only reason that – I guess there's two reasons you do it. One is UFC wants to keep in the good graces of Conor, and you can see the influence and power he has to get his friend and training partner a main event kind of show. Or they see Cub after the Duho Choi victory and his overall career as being a potential title contender, and this creates some sort of drama. Otherwise, it seems like I know that Cobb hasn't been super successful lately, but he just seems like he shouldn't be fighting Artem Lobov, especially after what he just did. And Lobov sucks. Like, he's not a very good fighter. So, it's just, and there, even then, again, all I can think of is they're positioning Cub for a title shot down the line, but I don't know. There's so many guys ahead of him. It's either going to be Aldo or Holloway, and then you could do, actually, this is just, we said it before, do Korean Zombie and Cub Swanson. Don't do Cub Swanson and Artem Lobov in the middle of, in Nashville. Like, you're going to do, have a guy named Artem Lobov fight in the middle of Hicksville? Come on. Then again, and his opponent is some tattooed surfer dude with SoCal on his stomach. Ugh, if I'm from Nashville, I'm getting my racist jeans out, and I'm just going to town on this one, even though they're both white. But still, I don't know if Cub's white, but close enough.
Also on that card, there's a couple interesting fights I noticed. I was looking at the undercard. Al Iaquinta's back. Apparently real estate is not going well now under the Trump presidency. He's coming back to fight Diego Sanchez, which is kind of a fun fight. Iaquinta usually has decent fights, and Sanchez is notorious for, like, bloodbaths and crazy brawls.
That's set up for Iaquinta to win. That's a very winnable fight for him.
Sure, sure.
But sure. Also, what an indictment of his skills in life. If you thought there's any place in America that would benefit from the Trump presidency and real estate, it would be the New York, New Jersey area. Sort of fail at that. Dude, you just aren't making America great anymore.
Well, the whole thing with Iaquinta was he was supposed to be on UFC 205 against, I want to say, Thiago Alves. And he pulled out of the fight because he said he wasn't going to get enough money and it wasn't worth his while. So I don't know. There hasn't really been any much news on it because he's not a huge name fighter. But I wonder if he renegotiated his deal or if the real estate thing wasn't working out and he's like, screw it, I'll go back, or how that all panned out. But
for his sake, I hope he's getting a little bit more money. Otherwise, this dumb bastard has a chance to fight on the first show in Madison Square Garden history. And his reward is to fight in Nashville a couple months later. Like, that's the worst decision anyone's ever made since Hitler's like, fuck it, I can fight the Russians in the winter. Yeah, let's go for it.
Also on that show, not huge names, but fun fights with, you know, up-and-coming guys.
Wait, sidebar. Yep. Yeah. Everybody just be very grateful. This could be Matt's last show ever. Because there are Russian subs or whatever outside the coast of Connecticut, which is close enough to Massachusetts that I think they're the same thing, and they have missiles, so he could be dead by next week. I'll carry on with the show. Don't worry. We won't miss a beat, but this could be Matt's last show ever.
It could be. It could be any of our last shows. You never
know.
It's
more likely to be my last show ever, but still.
Every show is a real blessing. Dustin Ortiz versus Brandon Moreno. And there was something else. Oh, Talis Leitch for Sam Alvey. So there's some name guys on that show. So what chances are by the time the fight card gets here, they'll all be hurt. But right now that looks decent. We've also got a rumored co-main event. This is not official. I think Joanna was saying she hasn't signed anything yet, but the rumored co-main for UFC 211 is Joanna Jędrzejczyk defending the strawweight title versus Jessica Andrade, which was the fight we kind of thought was going to happen, and a fun fight for sure. Not official yet, though. You're looking forward to that fight if it does happen.
Fucking A, Jessica Andrade is my girl. Yeah.
Okay. And then UFC 212 already has a main event. That show's not until June, so they're looking ahead here, which is kind of nice. We haven't had a main event 4 months out in, well, over a year, I want to say. They've been booking 2 or 3 months out lately, but this is a show in Brazil, so we've got the featherweight title unification matchup between the sort of interim, sort of real featherweight champion Jose Aldo versus the current interim featherweight champion in Max Holloway. Great fight, probably the two best guys in the division. If they keep it standing, I mean, it's going to be competitive. Holloway's long, but Aldo's got the experience and he's fast. Great fight. It won't do anything for buys in the United States, I wouldn't think, but definitely a fun fight between the best two featherweights in the world, as long as Conor can't make 145 anymore.
Yeah, I think the fight's outstanding. It's obviously the only fight they could really make, unless somebody got injured and they could do another interim title. Jose, I would favor to win just off, you know, immediately saying it, because until proven otherwise, I think the dude's like one of the greatest fighters ever. Max is young. This is one of those fights there where I would judge it not just on pay-per-view. I think that when it comes to fights in Brazil, the Brazilian market is big enough and is shown to be resilient enough that I think it's okay that when they do shows in Brazil, if they don't do gangbusters in America, because some of those guys like, you know, Anderson and Vitor, and I think Jose to a lesser extent, are pretty big stars in Brazil, and I think they can do okay money-wise that way.
The one thing I you know, a lot of fans or whatever, hardcore fans, love that fight, and it's a great fight. But most of them don't want to admit that Conor McGregor destroyed both of those guys. In Bellator, we've got probably their biggest fight in besides this weekend in Paul Daly versus Rory McDonald. It's going to be in London on May 19th. Obviously, Daly's English, so the fight makes sense there. Daly called out McDonald after his last win. So a big fight for Bellator. Again, it's two guys that, you know, haven't really drawn a lot of money elsewhere, but for Bellator, a big fight.
I think the victor of this fight is the Commonwealth champion, for anybody that's a nerd about geography. I think it's a fight that if it main evented a UFC fight night, I'd be like, hey, that's a pretty good main event, and that's all I can really expect out of them there. Although you buried, as you do, Matt, because you're just simply not as great as me, you buried the lead.
What's that?
Also on this show will be Kimbo Jr. fighting. And Scott Coker said it was because, quote, this was a, okay, not quote, paraquote, Kimbo's last fight was scheduled to be in London, and this is our way of honoring him.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're one classy-ass organization there, Bellator.
I hadn't even heard that.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you think Rory McDonald just destroys Daly, though? Everybody's like, this is a great fight. I feel like McDonald's just going to throw him around the cage. Like,
he should beat him. But, yeah. You know, Daly's striking and power is enough that when you
think But, I mean, if McDonald took all those shots from Robbie Lawler, it's like,
nobody thinks
Daly
of a fight's past 5 minutes.
Yeah.
When people think of a fight, they think of the first round, and that's it. Everybody assumes all fights end in 5 minutes. And for the first 5 minutes, this fight will be very entertaining. There will be drama. You'll still have the belief that Daly can clip him. You'll wonder, even if he gets taken down, can he get back up? But after 5 or 10 minutes, it's going to be very clear that Rory McDonald's just far, far better. And he's going to grind the shit out of Paul Daly and probably choke him out or something like that. Because Paul Daly is a really shitty mixed martial artist. Great striker, shitty overall fighter. And Rory McDonald is not. He is really great everywhere. So, yeah, Rory's going to kill him.
We're actually doing pretty good on time. I'm fairly happy with this. This weekend we have two major shows. Again, we've got Bellator on Saturday night. It's Bellator 172 from the SAP Center in San Jose, California. In the main event, we've got Fedor Emelianenko taking on Matt. Oh, what would you say?
Fyodor.
Fyodor. You add an extra syllable.
What is Dostoevsky's first name?
I don't even know. He's War and Peace, right?
You uneducated bastard. Fyodor Dostoevsky. Or Fedor. Oh. Not Fedor. He's not related.
Fedor? Isn't that like a hat?
That's
not
a fedora.
I am an imbecile.
Leave the jokes to me, motherfucker. Anyways, go on. Also, these are not two major shows. It's one major show and then UFC.
Eh.
Derek Lewis is a main event.
You don't give Derek Lewis the respect he deserves. Anyway,
no,
Matt Mitrione's going to kill Emelianenko. Yes or no?
I like that you just avoided the first name thing altogether now.
Yeah, I'm clever like that.
Yeah, not too clever.
Medium clever.
Yeah, I don't want you to get ahead of yourself here. I got to keep you in line. If you figure these things out, I'm doomed. I'm not going to do this shit on my own. If you die next in the war,
Yeah.
I'm not doing this. This is going to be in the dogs.
I am nervous about the Connecticut Missile Crisis. It's going to be
this fucking, trouble. This is Trump becoming the new JFK. There's one. There's a sentence nobody's ever spoken before.
Right,
well, he's got the womanizing thing down. Mitrione will probably beat Fyodor just because Fyodor sucks. But he's got like 5 or 6 wins in a row. And
they're
all crappy guys. Like, they're all washed up. And he lost to Maldonado in all reality. Mitrione, though, is not good. He shouldn't beat Fyodor. Like, even now, like, the part of me, like, because I was watching some, I watched the two full Nogueira-Fyodor fights, and Fyodor and Krokop. And, like, in his day, Fyodor really was very good. And that guy would have just murdered Mitrione. But I don't trust Fyodor. I mean, he had to have a hometown decision to beat a fucking bloated middleweight. And the only reason I can pick against Mitrione is Mitrione really sucks. I've told this story before, but I did a grappling tournament, and he did the same tournament, and I saw him get smoked by a dude and then throw a fucking hissy fit to the point where the guy's like, fine, let's have a rematch. And then Mitrione won by, like, one advantage. And this wasn't high-level stuff. This is some big, fat guy who's, like, you know, kind of powerful-looking. Mitrione's not good at fighting. He's just athletic. Fyodor is a good fighter, but he's just old, so...
Don't you feel like Mitrione's so much bigger, though, and on the feet, he's just going to be able to kind of light up Fyodor? I feel like Maldonado was, like, laying it into Fyodor the way he did. Like, what's Mitrione going to do to him? And I agree, Mitrione's not great, but he was always, like, a lower top 10, top 15 guy in the UFC. It wasn't like he was complete garbage. And he's younger, and he's bigger. He doesn't have the damage. I don't give Fyodor much of a shot at all.
I mean, he's not actually that much younger, probably, because, you know, Mitrione's a little older than people realize. He doesn't have the miles on his body from fighting, but he did pro football. Striking-wise, the one thing that Mitrione's got, well, he's got a lot of things going against him, but Fyodor doesn't, he fights at range. He's never been in a boxing range fighter. He stays far outside in traditional kickboxing range and leaps in with his hooks usually.
Right.
And Maldonado is okay with it because Maldonado is fantastic at fighting on the inside. He's one of the best inside non-clinch fighters you'll see in the sport. Mitrione likes to fight on the outside and kind of point fight. And again, he fights like it's a sport, not like it's a fight. He doesn't have that bite down, just beat you up, make it ugly type of thing, even though I know he almost lost an eye in that one fight. But and so Fyodor could leap in with his hooks and then clinch. And maybe if he's younger, I think Fyodor would do something. And if he gets Mitrione down, he'll murder him. He should. Well, I say that, but if he's in the middle of the cage, he'll murder him. Otherwise, Mitrione maybe gets up because Fyodor's not, I think, super well-versed in the nuances of the cage. So, yeah, Mitrione will probably win, and I'll laugh. And then I'll not give a shit in a day, and I'll just pretend like, I don't know, the last 13 years of Fyodor's career didn't happen. It's been shit forever. It's almost been like a decade, I bet.
It's been a while. I mean, the thing with Fyodor is, it's like some of those fights he won, it's like he got beat up by Randleman before he came back and won that fight. And a lot of the guys he even fought back then, like Chow Hung Man and some of these guys that padded his record a little bit. It's like, it was in pride, and I don't want to say I don't count pride, but I question a lot of their matchmaking and how they did things over there, where it's hard for me to say, like, Fedor's, like, the greatest of all time. I can't say that. No, but even if he had retired before the Verdum fight, I don't think I would have said it.
No.
Yeah, but a lot of people say that. A lot of people today, as we're speaking, and people have watched the sport a long time and know Fyodor and know MMA, say he's the best ever. And it's like, I just think there's this fantasy about pride that isn't real because it was more violent and it was just a different scene. When a lot of those guys came over to UFC, I don't want to say they were proven to be frauds, but they were a little older. And they couldn't really compete like Krokop and Vanderlei and Nogueira, and all these guys who were legends in Pride, and even Emelianenko when he came to, you know, Strikeforce, it was like they didn't do that well. They were good, but they weren't killers anymore. And I don't know if that was because drug testing or they were older or a combination of all of it, but I just have never bought Fedor. And again, just to go back to this fight, like I think an average Bellator heavyweight is going to mop the floor with him.
It's possible. I mean, the thing about Fedor is he the greatest ever? No. Is he the greatest heavyweight ever? Maybe. Because
I think Velasquez destroys him. Both of them in their prime, healthy.
Yeah.
It's not even. I think Brock beats him. To be honest with you, I think Brock takes Fedor down and beats the shit out of him.
They're different eras, though.
I know, but
especially Velasquez. And look, I was always thought Fedor was overrated, and I thought Krokop was overrated, but I never thought Nogueira was overrated. I think Nogueira, if I had to say like. Who's been the most consistently great heavyweight, it's been Nogueira.
Right. I'm not saying Nogueira was overrated. I'm saying that crop of guys, when they came to the States and fought in the UFC regularly, for the most part, they were like 500 fighters in the UFC. You know what I mean?
Pride was clearly an illusion in many respects. But they had a few gems here and there. And Nogueira, who everybody knew was done anyways when he came to the UFC, still did have that amazing fight when he beat the shit out of Randy Couture. And he did tap out Tim Sylvia. Like, he was still a very credible top five guy.
Tim Sylvia, yes.
He was champion. So, interim champ, whatever, some sort of champion. So, when Nogueira was past his prime in the UFC there, he was fine. Heavyweights in the UFC, again, the record is two consecutive title defenses. So, it's not like the UFC's had this long run of heavyweights. So, with me, with Fedor, it's always been, I'm such an admirer of Nogueira, and I think Nogueira is so great, and yet Fedor absolutely owned him in every facet. Yeah. Now, a lot of that could just be styles make matches, sure. Right. But when your style is so great that you beat a guy that is one of the greatest who's ever lived, you are very good. Is he the greatest ever? I don't know. Is he one of the greatest heavyweights ever? Yeah, I feel comfortable saying that. But I'm with you. I think that people, in a great irony, all these hardcore MMA fans who hate pro wrestling have been completely worked by Pride. Because that shit was as much pro wrestling as anything.
Right.
They go out there. And Fedor would be fighting at Che Hong Man or Zulu Jr. Or even someone like Fujita, which is, whereas in the UFC, you look at every champion, the weakest reign of a champion for a while there was like Anderson Silva, because he's fighting Patrick Gauthier and all that. Otherwise, everybody in the UFC, they're all really good fighters first. And then there's entertainment second. And you know what? It doesn't always make the best product. Pride always had these freak shows and these entertaining cards overall, and it may have been really great, but it wasn't necessarily the most competitive athletically. So,
I'm with you. I think we're essentially on the same page.
We are.
Per usual, but to me, it's like you look back at the guys he was beaten since 05, since like Final Conflict 05, where he beat Krokop by decision. It's like you look at that run from, it was 05, right? So like 12 years. But the guys he beat, it's like, here we go. You ready? Zulu, Mark Coleman, which, okay, in 06 was Mark Coleman anything?
It's
okay.
Even then.
All right. Mark Hunt.
I was there for that show.
Mark Hunt, who was way worse back then. Who sucked so bad on the ground, couldn't do anything, lost like six fights in a row. Matt Lindland, an older middleweight.
Which he should have actually lost if he hadn't grabbed the ropes and cheated. And also, that Bulldog pay-per-view, greatest pay-per-view of all time.
Chow Hong Man.
Vladimir Putin was at that fight.
Hang on, Tim Sylvia.
Trump's buddy.
Arlovsky, who had the glass chin during that time. Brett Rogers. Like, who's in bathrooms, like, trying to jerk guys off at the library. Fabricio Werdum was a loss. Bigfoot Silva was a loss. Dan Henderson at 40 years old and being a middleweight knocked him out. Then he comes back to beat Jeff Monson. Yeah. Ishii, Pedro Hizo,
I love Pedro,
Jadeep Singh, and Fabio Maldonado.
Yeah.
Like, the last 10 years is a scam, and I just don't get it. Like,
especially
bizarre to me.
As of late, it's obviously been a sham. One of the things that kind of made me respect him is when he went through and he blitzed Tim Sylvia. And even though he was actually losing Arlovski until he hit the one big punch, he still finished him the first round. And when that happened, they were both like UFC caliber heavyweights. And that's really what it comes down to is if I'm looking at like the greatest heavyweights from that era, it's like if it's Randy Couture versus Fyodor, I think Fyodor could have beat him. And I'm not saying it would be a lock or anything like that, but it was a different era. And every heavyweight pretty much who's ever fought has some sort of knock against him. Like, I think Velasquez may be the most dangerous of them all when he's healthy, but he's never been healthy, and he'll never be the greatest ever for that reason. And Nogueira would never be the greatest ever because he lost to Fyodor, and Fyodor would never be the greatest ever because as soon as he faced anybody in a drug testing environment, he just got schooled. So even though he was old and at the point where you'd expect him to lose, that said, if you want to knock against Fyodor, it's heavyweights have aged very well, and he didn't. But then again, he's not really a heavyweight. He's always a small heavyweight. So I don't care. I'll watch the fight on Saturday because I don't have anything in my life, and this will be fun.
It's also a stack card, but a pretty good show for Bellator.
We have a real good co-main event, too. Oh, yeah.
On Bellator we're talking?
Oh, yes, we do.
You're talking about Patricky Pitbull versus Josh, don't spell it with a P, Thompson?
That's right. Josh Thompson's fighting.
Ooh. Yes.
Oh, he's so good looking. He's so good looking. He's such a good fighter. He's in part of the greatest trilogy in MMA history, I've decided. Ooh, I can't wait to watch Josh's fight. Woo-hoo.
Then we've also got Ollie Thompson versus Czech Congo, and Josh Koscheck making his much-awaited return to an MMA cage versus Mauricio Alonso, a guy I'm not familiar with at all. But
no one is.
Koscheck has come out and said, you know what, if BJ Penn was in Bellator, he wouldn't have been fed to Yair Rodriguez. And Koscheck seems totally fine after a long layoff and a lot of losses in a row to come back and fight a guy with really no name value at all.
It's actually accurate, and it's kind of true and the right thing to do, but it's very odd for a guy to be like, look, I've been off for a long time. I know I need a gimme to get me back in the game. That's basically what he's saying, which is a very... Again, it's true. It's how things should work. But you don't admit that. And you don't say it when you're hyping up the fight. But again, overall as a show, you got... I think Thompson and Pitbull is going to be a very good fight. They're both very talented guys, setting aside my unabashed love of Josh. They're both well-rounded and can do everything. And they tend to be exciting fighters. And the other fights on the card, on the main card, all have not just names, but something intriguing about them. Like Josh Koscheck, you're going to get brought into his world. He's just so punchable, and you want to just watch it happen. And, I mean, Czech Congo, that fight's the weakest by far. But the other two, you know, again, it's Fyodor. It's like if Mike Tyson fights. It doesn't matter how many times he loses, especially if it's free. You're going to want to see it. I mean, people fucking like Mike Tyson in movies now. So, and that's all fake. So, Fyodor, what I'm saying is he'll be in The Hangover Part 4.
I don't really want to see Koscheck or Fyodor fight. Koscheck looks so bad at the end there in the UFC. 5 straight losses. 4 of them finishes.
Holy fuck.
Johnny Hendricks split decision loss. TKO to Lawler. If you remember that, I think that was Lawler's debut. He just, like, took him down and, like, punched him in the face, and it was over, like, a couple minutes into the first round. Knocked out by Tyron Woodley.
Yeah. North, the same thing happened a lot.
He lost to Jake Ellenberger with a north-south choke. I've got no recollection of that.
Are you sure that actually happened?
That's what my Wikipedia is telling me. It was at UFC 184 in L.A. Anyway.
LA. Who's the – wait, hold on. L.A. main event 184. That would have been – let's see.
I can tell you.
No, hold on. I'll figure it out. They went to LA too much. 93 was Holly and Ronda. 94 was them. 84 would have been about 2000.
You want the date?
It would have been about 2013 or so.
No, 15. February of 15. 184.
A midget main event then.
Yeah, I mean, Ronda and Kat Zingano are pretty small, I guess.
Oh, fuck me. That was a big show. Yeah, never mind.
And then Eric Silva. He got guillotined by Eric Silva. So it's like he's coming off five losses, hasn't fought in a year and a half, almost 2 years. I don't know, man.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yeah, it's not happening
for
me.
That's all it is. That's all it is. It's like we haven't seen him for so long, and if you're – again, it's a fucking throwaway show for free on a Saturday night, and it's either this or they bring out these absolute no-name losers and – or some college champion, you're like, oh, yeah, he'll be really important in 8 years. And yeah. I'll watch Kasha, because if he wins, he'll cut a funny promo and I'll laugh. And if he loses, I get to watch a dickhead get his brain beat in.
Don't you feel like he was just never the same after the GSP fight, the second one, where GSP was lighting him up with those jabs and screwed up his eye? I feel like he was never the same again after that.
I think he quit as a fighter. I think it was one of those things where, as a competitor, you're always working towards something, and he got to it, and he realized, I just can't do it. And after that, he's just collecting a paycheck. And also, it coincides with, as people get older, they realize, maybe I should just, play up my pro wrestling character and make some money doing this instead of, losing or not getting paid as much as I can. Guys are always late to figure out that they shouldn't, that they should ham it up or whatever. Sorry, I'm trying to record something.
Like two shows at once?
Yeah. I have two shows at once going to record, but I'm watching basketball right now, and it's really entertaining, and I want to make sure I keep watching it. So I got to cancel Legion. I'll watch that tomorrow later on. Sunny can't. Okay. Wow. Holy shit, the Knicks are beating the fuck out of the Thunder. What the fuck is that?
Yeah, no more cost check. Then we've got a UFC fight night on Sunday night from lovely Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, which is beautiful in the middle of February. It's headlined by Derek Lewis versus Travis Brown. Lewis, I like Lewis. I know you don't really care about him. I think I think he's funny. I legit think some of the stuff he puts out is pretty funny.
He's caught jerking off.
That's always a good joke. But
always
he
a joke. Okay.
Yeah, he was.
I got roused for nothing.
He was. Yeah, it was a false erection. Anyway,
they all are.
I think he's got some charisma and a little personality. I even included one interview I saw with him for the open for the show, where he was talking about Ronda, and he knows he's got this fight with Travis Brown, and he legitimately said that he thinks Ronda's hot, but only when she cuts weight for fights and not the rest of the time. Like, he just came out and said that. He's going to fight her boyfriend in a week.
He's lying, because he's black, and if he doesn't like a little, cushion on the pushing, he's a liar of a black man.
That is racist. How
his nickname is the Black Beast. So I can get away with any kind of subtle racism I want when it comes to Derek Lewis. He totally likes a thicker woman, and I support him, and I kind of agree with him a little bit.
Well, he claims he likes Ronda when she's very dehydrated and cutting weight.
Maybe she can't move fast, and he can grab her like in the Wild.
He didn't mention that, but it could be true.
It was implied.
Who do you like in that fight?
Oh, Derek Lewis by far.
I mean, really?
Okay. I'll be curious, because I know Travis Brown left Glendale Fighting Club. And I think he's been at Alliance with where he started out when he was Dominic Cruz and all them, and he was scary good. And if that's actually the case, maybe he'll turn his career around. Otherwise, the dude is a piece of shit as a fighter. Like, I don't want to – okay, this is a very strained analogy, but basically Travis Brown is John Lennon and Ronda Rousey is Yoko Ono. to Travis Brown's career. Like, she came into his life, and he's been destroyed. He was a guy that everybody was like, yeah, this guy's really good. He's agile. He's got great footwork. He's tough. He's got power. And he went with her, and he just got sucked into that vortex. And he's with Edmund. And everybody knows that Edmund is probably the worst high-level coach we've ever seen in MMA history. And Derek Lewis, if nothing else, he knows how to hit hard. And he's a tough dude. And I'd probably even give him the puncher's chance in favor of him, even if Travis hadn't been with Edmund. Maybe. I don't know. But I also want to give a shout-out to the UFC for somehow managing to hold all of their shows in the same region. They're in Brooklyn. They're going to be in Albany. They're in Halifax. They just decided this is part of the cost-cutting measures. They're going to save on gas costs by not moving the Octagon across country.
Halifax is not real close to New York.
It's closer to New York than it is any other major North American city.
I'm Googling this right now.
Halifax is north.
How many hours? How many hours do you think it is? If you had a guess, driving.
From New York City?
Sure.
Six.
6 hours?
Yeah.
No, it's like 18. I'm going to look it up.
Halifax is the east coast of Canada.
I know where it is. You're the one that doesn't know. Yeah, you're the one that doesn't know where it is.
Why would you know where Halifax is? I know where it is because I'm an intelligent, educated man.
And I'm only medium smart. Clever.
Medium smart and
average at everything.
You have two kids.
That wasn't because of me. That's because of my wife.
I was going to say, I don't know if I said that on a previous show, did I?
No, you just message it to me all the time, creepily. Oh,
your fucking kids are just adorable. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, these are really cute. I'm like, I totally understand why you'd have kids now. Like, your son has got this curly hair. I'm like, that's a really cute kid. Like, he looks really nice. He doesn't look like he's mean. Like, my friend Megan, on Friday, she's giving birth to her second kid, and she's having a C-section, all this shit. Like, her first kid, scheduled it.
You know, if you know when it's going to happen, usually a C-section. But go on.
Her brother, who's got, like, mental issues in the army and all this, is like, oh, well.
Is he the one that lives in the bus?
Yep. He was the one that said, if it's scheduled for that day, there's no way it could ever happen any other day. I'm like, yeah, that's not really how it works, but okay. She's a 5-year-old kid. He's the only kid I've ever really met. And he's like a nice kid. But, you know, I can tell he's a pain in the ass. He's got his mom's genes. And I look at your kids, I'm like, I bet anything, like, if you're like, Mike, babies the kids. I'd be like, okay. And I'd be like, hey, dude, I'm not going to say your kid's name on there. Go wash your hands and eat dinner. He'd be like, oh, okay. He'd wash his hands, eat the dinner. And I'd be like, so what do you do now? He'd be like, we watch Bambi and Aladdin. I'd be like, oh, okay. Now what do you do? Oh, now it's 8:30. It's time for bed. I'd be like, okay. And I feel like your kids would just be completely able to take care of themselves, and it would make my job easier.
You never have to worry about that. Anyway.
Hey. I watched a 5-year-old kid.
It was too easy.
I watched a 5-year-old kid for like an hour and a half, and he only spilled a couple of things on the floor. So.
I think I saw a video of that. Is that where he was like running around and he called you stupid or something?
Yeah, I actually
smart kid.
I filmed all kinds of videos, and then I took him down because his mom's like, "Don't put any more stuff of my kid on Facebook." And first I'm like, "Oh shit!" Like, she's afraid, and then she says later on when she came back, she's like, "Actually, no, it's just because I thought he was hamming up for the camera, and he was overacting." I'm like, oh, whatever.
Okay, just so we're on the same page here with your theory about UFC cutting costs. New York City to Halifax, Nova Scotia is 13 hours and 48 minutes.
Holy fuck!
So you understand, like, New York is 6 hours, 5.5 hours from where I live. So it's more like 6 hours from New York to Boston driving.
Okay.
So you've got to go through fucking New Hampshire, all of Maine. Maine is a big-ass state. I'm sure you've seen a map. Maine's big. You got to go through all of Maine, then go through New Brunswick, get to, like – and then Nova Scotia's like an island or some shit. You got to, like, loop around. It's freaking up there, okay, man.
So I would be correct if I said it was, like, about 6 hours from Boston. Well, Really? Is that true? I thought Boston was like 3 hours from New York.
No. I've driven it. I've driven to New York City. It's like 5.5.
Holy shit. From the Cape. I thought the East Coast was a lot smaller than that.
No, it's an entire coast.
Yeah, you Upper East Coast people.
How about this? I've driven to Florida with my family twice. It's like Orlando, Disney World. It's like a 24-hour ride if you stop and get gas a couple times.
It's like 22 or 24 from here also. Yeah.
But if you went from like the tippy top of Maine, you're going to add another 8 hours anyway.
I should learn more about Maine, given that it's like one of my top five places to move.
Maine is weird.
You've been to Maine?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Is it really?
Two states away. It's two states away.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only three states within driving distance of me. Iowa, Wisconsin, and Indiana. Mm-hmm. And, like, they're both – well, Indiana's kind of close. Everything else, whatever. But Maine, I love Maine. They got all the lighthouses and stuff.
I mean, a lot of places on the East Coast have lighthouses. I mean, the Cape's got a ton of them, but
really?
Yeah, Portland, Maine's cool. That's a cool little city. I've been there a couple times. Yeah, once, twice maybe.
Oh, you have lighthouses?
The Cape? Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, I'm going to visit that. I love lighthouses. I fucking love lighthouses.
Is it because of the shape, or what's the deal?
I just like the idea of, like, this solitary figure.
Yeah.
Yes, he's solitary. Yes, he's alone, which I like. I like being away from people. But he's saving lives. And he doesn't have to interact with people. He provides a valuable function to society. But the only way to provide that function is to be alone. That's the greatest thing I could ever think of. Somebody's like, you have to be away from people. And that makes you valuable. I'd be like, holy shit, that's way better than my plan of figuring out how to be so valuable to people that they let me be alone. So I love lighthouses.
Yeah. You might be disappointed when you see a few. Maybe I take them for granted. I don't know. Or maybe you just have a weird obsession with lighthouses.
Like I do with corn.
What do you do with corn?
I take it for granted.
Oh.
You don't have corn.
Like, I can go to the supermarket and buy corn.
No, we have fields for miles and miles.
Yeah, but they're not your fields. You drive by them. Like
I could probably stop and grab a stalk and no one would stop me.
Mm.
You wouldn't want to eat it, though. That's all feed corn, but still.
Corn on the cob is good in the summer. Butter salt.
This is corn. It's for cows.
Yeah. I understand. It's probably also for like oil and stuff, like vegetable oil.
Ethanol. Do you guys have ethanol up there?
Like in our gasoline, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it says like 10% ethanol or something.
Oh, okay, you got the 85-15. Okay, because we have it here, but I always assume maybe we're weird because the Midwest pays farmers to not grow food sometimes because that's America. Maybe Trump will fix it. I don't know.
Yeah, because everyone wants to pay more money for food.
Hippies do. That's why they eat organic shit. Normal people eat stuff filled with growth.
Oh, one thing we will never agree on is food.
Smart, and I know that GMO is good.
No, I don't even care about GMO. I don't have a problem with GMO, but I also don't have a problem with labeling it. Like, if people want to know what's in their food, let them know what's in their food. Like, we're going to go down that path again. But
why did the government have to force it by gunpoint? People can just decide on their own. They can do a little bit of research, take a little responsibility for your life, people. Go online. Look it up. Just like, you know what?
You want people to go online and look up every piece of food they buy at the supermarket to see if they have GMOs.
All right, Dana White, who wants to absolve Cyborg of her sins, you should know what you're putting in your body. It's your responsibility. You're excusing Cyborg steroid use. That's what you're doing.
You're encouraging companies to not disclose how their products are made when people consume them.
If they don't disclose what's in their product, you just don't buy it. That's it. If you think that protests on that nature don't work right now, ask all these companies right now who are like, oh, no, we don't really like Trump because we're seeing all the protests. The almighty dollar controls everything, and that's what I believe in. It says in God we trust, so I guess in theory by transference I believe in God, but I really believe in the Benjamin Franklin, even though he wasn't a president, but he's on the dollar bill.
So you think eventually if enough people cared about GMOs and they felt it was an issue, over time enough people wouldn't buy products created with modified, genetically modified crops that
I know
every farmer would go non-GMO eventually. Based on sales.
I know it for a fact.
Right.
Because there are products right now that specifically advertise themselves as no GMO.
Right.
They go out of their way to say that. And so you know, by inference, if a product has GMO, they're not advertising it that way, because if they weren't GMO, they would just note it. There's nothing to be lost by that. Therefore, when I go to buy chips and I see donkey chips, which I fucking love, but they say no GMO, I still eat them. Or Tostitos.
I like that you won't eat things that are non-GMO.
I go out of my way to avoid them for the most part. Yeah. Because science makes everything better. Just go ahead, don't wash your hands before you eat. I'll be washing my hands and you Luddites can all die of dysentery. GMO is just like soap. It's a soap for your food.
I don't have an issue with GMO. I don't think they're dangerous. I don't care about it. But if people want to know what's in their food, I don't have an issue with that either. Okay.
The company can advertise it.
Fair. I'm okay.
It's not just fair. It's correct.
I understand what you're saying, but
me and Ron Paul and Gary Johnson all – oh, fuck, Gary Johnson doesn't support that. Never mind. Damn it. I'm alone on an island.
Which is
how islands work. Yeah.
How do you feel about the semi-main event of this show? It's a middleweight fight between Johnny Hendricks and Hector Lombard.
Sorry, I'm smoking weed. I like the fight, actually.
And okay.
It'll probably be a much better fight than they could have had before. It's two welterweights fighting at middleweight. They're not going to be as depleted. And it'll probably be the best fight they could possibly have between those two. And I expect Hendricks to win based on Lombard's old. So that's really kind of my going figure. Plus, Hendricks can grind things out. Loser, honestly, I'd cut the loser.
Yeah, people are saying this is a loser leaves town match.
Like, they're both kind of names, but they're not, like, to me, bigger names than Rory McDonald or anything like that. And they're definitely proving themselves especially if you lose, you're going to prove yourself, you ain't worthy of this fucking company. But I don't know. It'll be fine. It's good. It's good for the those Inuits up there who don't get any entertainment.
Do you feel like Johnny Hendricks has like the quickest decline of anybody in MMA history? Like, I just feel like a couple years ago, he essentially beat GSP in that fight, the greatest welterweight ever. And then he had those fights with what the hell is his name?
Robbie Lawler.
That were competitive. He was close. He had one win. Then he had a split decision loss. And he was looking really good. He beats Matt Brown. Now it's just three straight losses. Stephen Thompson, Kelvin Gastelum, Neil Magny. He keeps missing weight. Like, what do you think happened with him? Did he suddenly just get older one day? Is it USADA related? Like, what's the deal?
To answer the first part you spoke of, I don't know if he's the quickest fall from grace. But
it's pretty severe, though, man.
It's very severe. It's definitely one of the biggest falls, no doubt. It might be the biggest fall from grace from guys that I didn't think were initially frauds. Like, we've seen guys who've been kind of propped up and then exposed later on. Sure. I don't think Johnny Hendricks was ever exposed. I think he really was a great fighter. And even his losses, like, he was kind of there. I really think it was just a case of he got successful and he didn't care. You know, he wasn't hungry, pardon the pun. And once he was successful, he had the money to invest in the loser of a restaurant business, because, let's be honest, people, you have to be very, very smart
medium clever.
Or medium clever to run a restaurant successfully. I was trying to give you a fucking compliment, you motherfucker.
After you've been burying me for the last 2 hours, sure.
Exactly. Okay. It's like negging on a woman. You're good looking for this bar. But, yeah, I mean...
And you wonder why you watch fights every Saturday night. Go on.
Because women suck.
Yes, it's the 3.5 billion women on the planet and not you. Go on.
My divorce still hurts. I think that's... I think that Hendricks...
That's
just
a show in its own way.
Yeah. I think Hendricks just, you know, again, he hit the good life and it's difficult to train at the high level. And the losses were against very, very good fighters. He hasn't had that loss from, like, oh, wait, you lost to that guy? Like, they brought up Tiki Ghost and then you lost to him? Like, these are actually pretty good fighters. They've all been top 10 guys. So you could have, he could have lost to them in his quote unquote prime as well. Maybe we're writing him off a little too quick. Hector Lombard, kind of the same, but that's also kind of the new modern reality of MMA. We're getting to the point where 1 through 10 are very, very evenly matched. So when guys go on significant runs of wins, it's really a credit to just how good they are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think when you see a guy putting together a 6, 7, 8 fight win streak, you know, one time that would have been, like, almost unheard of. Nowadays, it's like, that's legendary status, and you're seeing some, again, Mighty Mouse, probably the best example of a guy that is completely underappreciated,
right?
Because he's beating a murderer's row, but it's just an anonymous murderer's row. And I think almost every division's like that, except for maybe heavyweight. Even heavyweight's the best it's ever been. Every division, you're looking at it and you're going, there are at least 3 or 4, maybe 5 or 6 guys at the top level who could easily beat each other. So when a guy wins multiple fights in a row at that level, that's really impressive. And Hendricks is just kind of on the other end. And yeah, he lost to Lawler, but this is a split decision, and the Magny fight wasn't good. But, you know, he's still there, and we'll see what he's got against Lombard. I think Lombard was a guy that came in with a lot of hype, looked okay sometimes, but realistically never, I don't think ever, showed himself to be at that elite level of the UFC, and Hendricks has been there. So I would just think that Hendricks, having been that high and being much younger, gives him the advantage.
Fair enough. I mean, rounding out the main card, there's not a whole lot of name value. Like, third from the top right now, they're listing Sam Cecilia versus Gavin Tucker.
Who?
As far as exactly names you might know, people might know, Elias Theodoro's fighting Cesar Ferreira. Sarah McMahon, I think she was supposed to fight Liz Carmouche, but Carmouche got injured. So she's fighting somebody named Gina Mazzani. And then the rest of the card, there's like Paul Felder, Carla Esparza. And then one name that caught my eye was Zahabi. It's actually Faraz Zahabi's little brother making his UFC debut on the prelim card on Fox Sports 1. So besides that, not a whole lot to look for on the undercard, I don't think.
Honestly, I think it's about as great a card as anyone could ever expect to happen from Halifax, Nova Scotia, in the middle of February.
It had JDS on it.
Exactly. At one point, it would have been JDS and Hendricks, Carla Esparza, Sarah McMahon. Like, these are all champions or title contenders or whatever. Like, that's actually pretty good for a town of 3,000 moose. So, good for you, Nova Scotia. That's a cheap joke, but still, you're so far north in Canada that it actually, and I'll bet $100 right now, Nova Scotia is closer to Greenland than it is to Chicago.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're closer to fucking Europe than you are to the middle of the greatest country in the world, or in America. So, good for you, Nova Scotia. You got a winner.
Yeah. I don't think it is. Wait, you think Chicago's closer?
No, I think Greenland is closer to Nova Scotia than Chicago is.
I can't figure that out right now. But I'll I'll have an answer for you next week. Looking at a map like the globe, Greenland's really far up there.
But I know
Greenland's weird.
Dude,
do you know the largest city in Greenland has 17,000 people?
Maybe I'm thinking Iceland with Reykjavik.
Iceland's better than Greenland. Greenland's huge, but
it's
like,
full
no
of
one,
ice, and Greenland and Iceland's full of green.
The irony.
She's deliberately done, so says my history book.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, apparently the Vikings that settled those areas, one of them was obviously beautiful and one of them sucked, and so they said, we'll call this one Greenland. And then everyone would be like, oh, it must be really nice, because Iceland sounds like a shit. But Iceland is beautiful, and I guess it's actually a relatively temperate climate.
Yeah, Iceland's, I mean, it's really cold in the winter, but I always heard Reykjavik's like one of the coolest cities in the world.
Yeah,
literally.
I talked to a famed comedian, Doug Stanhope, about this, and he did a show at a prison in Reykjavik. And Doug would do that, but still, it was unlike any prison in the United States. And this was like a maximum security prison, but they had like people could walk around free. They had a kitchen they could use whenever they wanted. They had knives and forks at their disposal, but they were just bolted down. But still, like Iceland's apparently a really, really neat place, and it's also one of the most significant geographical locations in world history, because that's where Gorbachev and Reagan met. It's also where Bobby Fischer played what's-his-face in chess. So it's a very important city. The UFC's not gone there yet, but they should, because it's in the neighborhood of Halifax.
I wonder... I've never heard about MMA in Iceland. I wonder if it's even legal or how it works there.
I bet there's some strong man that's done it. Iceland, I feel like, develops a lot of world's strongest men.
Do you ever watch those competitions?
Fuck yeah, on ESPN2? They're awesome. That and the dude to do, like, log cutting and shit.
Yeah, I like when they, they hack, like, a board into the tree and then climb the tree with the hacked
piece. Yeah, that's awesome. Although, that said, world's strongest man, like... Somebody's like, how do we figure out who the strongest guy is in the world? Well, we could use these weights. And all of these weights have perfectly calibrated, you know, tonnage to them or whatever. Or we'll have this guy drag a tractor and see who does it best. And everybody's like, yeah, let's go with the fucking tractor. That's way funnier. And so it's like the world's strongest man. It's like... these crazy, absurd things, they take a lot of real, practical strength, but not exactly scientific in nature.
No. I remember the one in particular, they were like, carry these, like, boulders, and each time they'd have to put it on, like, a higher shelf. I'm like, why wouldn't you start with the highest shelf first and then work the other way? It's very odd.
Well, they're the world's strongest men, not the world's smartest men.
Yeah, that is a weird, weird contest. What's Puzanowski or whatever, right? Did he win it once?
Marius Puzanowski. Yeah, he was the world's strongest man. Yeah.
Sean McCorkle tapped him out, I think.
He probably pulled like a school bus full of midgets or something, which is obviously a very accurate way. Like, you know, we have pounds, we have kilograms, we have stones, and we have school bus full of midgets. These are just natural ways to measure weight.
Huh. I'm actually looking at it. They've changed some of the contests. I haven't watched it in a long time. There's a fridge carry now. They put it on like a weightlifting bar and put two fridges on it, and you carry it.
Of course, fridges have a very universal weight to them. That makes sense. Yeah, everybody measures things in terms of how much is it? How heavy is a car? Oh, it's 2.5 fridges. Yeah, that works.
This one has like an ice maker and stuff on it. It looks pretty nice.
Oh, you didn't mention the ice maker. Oh, that changes everything.
Well, the question is it full of ice? I mean, these could be gimmicked fridges. What else is going on in the world? Any stuff you would like to discuss?
There's all kinds. We got time.
All right.
So bring on the stuff.
I don't have any stuff prepared. I honestly don't. We're at 2 hours
you
now.
You fucking messaged me like 30 times a day about stuff.
I said, there was so much other news that we probably wouldn't have time for stuff this week. And we're at 2 hours. What do you want to talk about, Trump?
I don't – yeah, that stuff you talked
about. I know, but I didn't have, like, anything, like, clever. Like, there was no Super Bowl. There wasn't anything really newsworthy. I mean, I can look back and see what I sent you. I'm sitting at a Hewlett-Packard laptop right now.
I can tell. I can hear you typing, too.
Yeah, well, I don't lie. It's not good. Oh, Linda McMahon. How about Linda McMahon and the whole family being photographed with Trump and that meme saying 46% of these people have been stunned by Stone Cold? That was my favorite meme of the day.
That is such an amazing photo. Like, I know on some level the position Linda was appointed is probably within her purview. There's probably lots of weirdos in, like, other industries we just don't know about it. Like, probably, like, Obama's small business administrator was, like, I don't know, the chick that created Beanie Babies or something, which actually just down the street from me. So maybe it's just as dumb and it's a ceremonial thing, but fucking Vince McMahon, Triple H, and Stephanie were in the Oval Office with the President of the United States getting their picture taken, and he knows all of them. That's really, really weird. And I know Obama did, you know, Obama appeared on Raw that one time via satellite. Like, you smell what the Rock is cooking. But at least his was clearly like, look, I know this is cool with some people. I'm going to read the shit that, like, my young staffers tell me. But that's it. Whereas right. Trump is like, hey, Vince, we're the two crazy-ass billionaires from the Northeast who are basically carbon copies of one another. The only difference is I built I lent my name to buildings and you lent your name to pro wrestling. I mean, if Trump is president, Vince McMahon has to be thinking, oh, fuck me, I could have done it. No, I could have.
He cuts a better promo than Trump.
He cuts a better promo and he's thinner and, you know, he's got a better built-in audience. He's got to be just looking and going, come on. Me and Trump did an Eiffel Tower to that Miss Universe at one time. Like, how is it he president and my wife couldn't even become senator? This is bullshit. So good for, you know, the McMahons for weaseling their way into the weirdest administration in American history. I expect Omarosa and Tila Tequila to be up next.
I think Omarosa already got a job.
Did she fucking really?
Yeah, she's doing something at the White House. I forget what it is.
Oh my God.
Let me check.
That's amazing. Like, what's really even more amazing than that is that Omarosa maybe gets a position in the White House. Meanwhile, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who took over for Trump, who was a governor, is feuding with the president. Although I did see the Apprentice celebrity ratings were really, really low. So I guess Arnold will be fired.
We need to say a prayer for the Apprentice ratings. Isn't that what Trump said?
We got to say a prayer for Arnold because, God fucking damn, fucking nail it, Trump. Come on. You use a fucking national prayer breakfast to take a shot at the guy who's a star of the Terminator. Like, come on. Like, you spent – like, first of all, as a matter – if I was president, I wouldn't actually do a national prayer breakfast because set aside my own personal beliefs in life, I think it's important to let people who are non-believers know that the government's there for them. Also, so I think any outward sign of the government being involved with religion is not proper.
I mean, my whole thing is just be genuine. Like, if you believe and you're whatever, okay, that's fine. Or if you're atheist, dead set against any religion, just be that person. I know you can't do it in politics, but just be genuine. I don't even really care. I don't want to say I don't care what your beliefs are, but just be, like, real. And, like, that was the issue I had with both Hillary and Trump. It's like, I don't believe either of you in the slightest. But Omarosa this is from Fox News. This is real news. This is not that fake bullshit from CNN. This is real news. Former Apprentice contestant Omarosa Manigault has landed a job in the Donald Trump administration as part of a new wave of White House hires announced Wednesday by the transition team.
Black House.
Omarosa was named as Director of Communications for the Office of the Public Liaison.
In my world, I'll pretend she's responsible for Spicer and Conway and all these other people whose only job...
She hired them.
Like, their only job is to speak in public, and they're terrible at it.
Dude, that Stephen Miller guy. Did you watch that?
Look, at least Stephen Miller, I don't... Is he a PR guy?
I forget. I can find out.
I know that Conway and Spicer are specifically hired to speak in public, and they're not good at it.
Stephen Miller is the senior advisor to the president of policy.
Then I can give him a break because senior advisor,
don't put him on TV. He's so bad and came off authoritarian.
He should not be on TV. He's not good at TV, but you know what? Some guys aren't. Like, Karl Rove was very important to the Bush administration, good or bad, but he didn't do a ton of TV. He knew what his role was, and even when he did TV, he's actually not bad at it. Dick Cheney, he didn't do a ton of TV because he knew what his role was. Know what people are good at. Right. And that's the biggest thing to take away from all this fucking debacle is that, I mean, Trump, if nothing else, is good at PR. And yet the two people who are front and center for most of his PR are very objectively bad at it. Like, I could take Sean Spicer's job, probably, or Conway's job, and I think I could do a credible job. And I drink a lot. I still could do a credible job on TV just because – and I think you could do it too. You wouldn't have to believe it, but you'd be like, look, I know what the guy's positions are. Here's what my talking points. I can stick to them. Don't say things like alternative facts. Just don't say that phrase ever. Nobody who's in PR for a living should ever even think of the phrase alternative facts. Also, don't start your first press conference off with the more amped up version of Melissa McCarthy's parody of you on Saturday Night Live. Like, she'd even go the full Spicer with that thing. Like, that's just crazy. And I know that Trump's doing things differently. He's shaking up Washington. I kind of respect that a little bit. I give him a little leeway because he doesn't have all the insiders with him. And I think that's kind of important. Like, Bill Clinton, his first year, wasn't very smooth because they didn't have all the insiders. Over time, they developed him. George W. Bush had all the insiders. He had all his dad's people and so on and so forth. Trump doesn't have those people. They don't know what they're doing. I understand. I'll let it slide a little bit because maybe you have the right idea of the kind of person you want, but they're just not good at it yet. But holy fuck, these people aren't just not good at it. I don't know how anybody could be an attorney. Somebody's been on television. Because I know Conway's been on TV for years. I remember seeing her on Fox News probably a decade plus ago.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think she was that bad early on leading up to the election. And I think we might have even talked about this. Like I saw her on Bill Maher and a couple of their shows. And she kind of made an okay case for Trump where it wasn't she's not bad. And, you know, she's a woman and she can, I want to say, play that card. But try and get some women voters on board with Trump. And, at the time, it made sense. But I don't know if it's the pressure's gotten to her or she's just exhausted and beat up and has just taken, I want to say, too much punishment from the media, but just feels she's just shot. She's a shot fighter at this point, maybe.
I see the things that they talk about and the position that Trump has taken. And I'm not saying that they're easy positions to defend, but these aren't really that difficult. Like, you can make your case on the immigration debacle. You can very easily just come out and be like, look, people are saying this is a ban on all Muslims. That's not true. 85% of all the Muslims on the planet are not affected by this.
Right.
We are only targeting the seven countries, and these seven countries were previously identified by President Obama as being higher at-risk countries. And therefore, we're imposing a very, very brief stay as we review all the procedures going forward. I just made that up off the top of my head, and I got a lot of drugs on my body right now. Spicer and Conway are like, you're all liars, and that's fake news, and CNN, you hate Trump because his wife is hot, so you guys suck. Like, fuck off. Like, this is not that tough. Yeah. And I'm a 34-year-old degenerate, and I could do this shit.
What do you think about Michael Flynn and Puzder already, like, they were supposed to be cabinet members, and they've either been fired or withdrew their papers or whatever you want to call it. So basically the labor secretary and the national security advisor are already have jumped ship.
Yeah,
like,
I don't
do you
know.
Find that odd? Like, what the, to me, that's just very – you would think a Trump presidency would probably be chaotic. But it's like, man, I don't want to say it's already fallen apart, but to lose two cabinet members 3 weeks in when one hasn't even really started the job yet is kind of odd. And he also shakes people's hands weird.
Well, that's yeah, it's a power shake. I think it's only actually one cabinet member. I don't think Flynn – I don't think NSA is a cabinet-level position.
Okay.
I think that's just something you can appoint.
Okay.
But that's a nerd-ass technical detail.
Sure.
Again, I go back to – people forget the first year of Bill Clinton. It was a disaster. He was in shambles. Everything was falling apart around him. A lot of that came with basically Hillary overreaching on health care, but he recovered. And again, like I said before, Trump is doing things different. Maybe you won't have people as smooth at things. Flynn is an odd one. I mean, the guy was a legitimate general. I think there's been this weird narrative with Trump and Russia, which I don't totally buy. Russia, the worst that anybody's ever said they did is they had fake news articles. Like, from like anybody in the world ever said, well, I was going to vote for Hillary, but then I read something on Russia Times, and now I'm going to just change my vote. It just – no, it didn't happen. I don't really buy that Russia's impact was that severe. But Flynn, for whatever reason, whether he truly lied to Vice President Pence and was compromised, or it's just a sign that Trump's administration is going to take a different position on these things going forward – I don't know. I'm guessing the guy was probably okay. He'd been in the kind of that position before in his career, not the exact same, but the dude's been around. Like, he's a fucking military dude. You know, he probably knows better than, well, Trump does, and that's all we really need out of anybody right now is you know better than Trump. So, I mean, but maybe it could just be a sign that Trump's approach to everything is changing, that he's changing the winds. And that's the one thing I'll always say for Trump is I think the guy is willing more than most people to just say, all right, fuck it, I'll get rid of that, I'll scrap it, let's go it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And more than any other politician, he's not an ideologue. He is semi, almost kind of a pragmatist with a giant ego behind him. A giant ego.
Huge. But
it's huge. It's just the biggest ego anyone's ever had. You never seen ego like this before, except for I'm very humble also, and everybody knows I'm the most humble person that's ever lived, but don't think I don't have a big ego also. My hands are not representative of my ego. Let's just say that right now, and I went with the cheap joke, and I hope we don't all die. That's my only hope. I just hope we don't have a nuclear war. Anything besides that, I'm a fucking...
What do you think of those Facebook posts that guy was putting up at that party at Mar-a-Lago where he was taking a picture with, like, the army dude who was carrying, like, the nuclear suitcase and, like, talking about it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
we're in a time where shit like that can happen based on how big social media and stuff is, but it's like –
I think
come on. It's another one that's just a bad look. It's like
I think if Barack Obama had been elected president right now, the same thing probably would have happened.
You think?
But he was 8 years earlier. Social media was not even close to what it is now, and they had the ability to put their people in place by the time social media became a thing. I think people really underestimate like how much of I don't want to say that the top level guys, but we'll say that if Trump is 10 and the secretaries are 9, like the 5 and 6s are Obama guys, and they get replaced over time within a year or two. And so in 3 or 4 years, Trump's people are all in place everywhere, and probably, you know, something like the guy holding the supposed football doesn't get photographed. And you know what? He shouldn't get full credit. Even if somebody knows that's the guy, don't put that one in the papers. That's the guy with the supposed nuclear suitcase. It's not really what people think it is. It's not like they open it up and they turn two keys and Trump pushes a button and everybody dies. Like, there's like a lot of steps between Trump and shooting off a missile. And I'm pretty sure there's some dude at NORAD that got the post note that just says, "Do not make America dead." And that's just what it says right there. But it's just, there's a narrative out there. And the narrative is that Trump is in over his head.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that happens will be reported in that way. And you know what? He might be. He might be in over his head. And this is all just foreshadowing for his ouster within 18 or 24 months. Or it's just like a lot of guys who become president and they go, "Oh shit." And then you see in 4 or 8 years, all of them have aged several decades because every morning they woke up and the first words were, "Good morning, Mr. President. Here's your coffee. By the way, Russia says that they're going to destroy Portland tomorrow. What do you want to do?" And you go, oh, fuck. And their sphincter tightens up and they don't take a shit, a peaceful shit for 4 years.
The thing that gets me about all of this is just like how partisan it all is. Like the conservative, the right is like, so I want to say they're all pro Trump, but it's like they're going to defend him like no matter what. And it's like some of the stuff he's doing, you just scratch your head and you're like, this is really dumb. And then at the same time, Trump can't do anything right for the left, no matter what it is. It was like the same thing with Obama, but I just feel like it's even more extreme now. Like people who supported Trump, voted for him, are just going to go down with that ship. And he speaks his mind. He's going to make the economy better. This other shit with the wall. I don't care how many schools we could build. He said he was going to build the wall, and I respect him for it. It's like, we don't need a wall. It's like it's so stupid. But
we don't need schools either. But
if the economy like rebounds, you know, like there's going to be something on the left where it's because of initiatives Obama got started when he was in office, or whatever it might be. There's going to be some spin on it that Trump didn't actually help it. And to me, it's just like, it almost makes me not want to go online or read anything anymore, and I know that's not the answer, but it's like I can already predict what Bill Maher or Hannity or whoever is going to say before they even say it and know their spin on it, and there's no partiality to any of it, and it's just getting old for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now what you have is basically you have your typical left-right divide. I think the left is very, very unified, and the right is split between people that love Trump and people that don't like the left, mm-hmm. and therefore they will support Trump a little bit. And I'm closer to that category by far.
Sure.
Like, I like to watch Hillary Clinton cry, but I don't really like Trump at all. Like, substantively, I think his free trade policy is bad. I think a lot of his policy, I just don't like a lot of the stuff he stands for, and I've written about it and said it. I'm a classical liberal. It's fine. But yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a new world in that, again, social media can't be understated as far as its impact on all this. People have always had their opinions, and we're just getting bombarded with it now.
Sure.
I'm not as bothered by it, and a lot of that's because I was a dorky 17-year-old who once was in my history class at my prep school, and the teacher started reading a letter to the editor from the Chicago Tribune, and it was from me.
Right.
Like, I'm that guy. Like, mm-hmm. I've always been – like, I was done with giving a shit about people's opinions and arguments on politics like 10 years ago because I was so involved with that. And I know what I believe. I knew why I believed it. I argued it. I had it in college. Again, as a more conservative person, I think conservatives get challenged more on university campuses. I had professors who would explicitly call me out, and I'd be like, yeah, I'll argue it. And I probably didn't make a lot of friends, but shocker. So, like, I'm kind of used to this idea of paying attention to it. I think you see a lot of people, though, for the first time in a long time, are really interested in what's going on in the country.
Yeah.
And they're paying attention, and they don't have, I'll say, the coping skills to look at it and be like, no, this is not the end of the world. Like, there are legitimate checks and balances. Everybody was like, oh my gosh, Trump's going to end the world, we're all going to die, blah, 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 blah. And, like, within the first 3 weeks of his presidency, two judges shut him down.
Right.
Like, we have a very solid country. And you know what happened when the Ninth Circuit affirmed the lower court's decision? Trump didn't do anything. He didn't go in there and say, ignore that, I'm going to impose martial law. He didn't try to go around them. He didn't try to get anybody unseated. He didn't pull an FDR and try to pack the court with judges that he likes. He just said, all right, I'm gonna do something else. And that, to me, more than anything else that's happened, is the most important thing that's happened during Trump's presidency. It's the proof that the brilliant system that our founding fathers, and people hear it so often, we're so tired of it, but holy shit. When you look at the geniuses that we had writing things from Madison to Monroe to Jefferson, the poise and class of Washington, we are so lucky as a people that these were the men that said this is how things will be. You compare that to every other country, it sucks. And it's working. The checks and balances are working exactly as they were intended. They anticipated the rise of a presidential type figure who was just a populist candidate. He'd be opposed on some level. He'd be anchored a little bit by Congress. And you're seeing the Republicans in Congress are pulling the reins back a little bit on Trump. They're not letting him go full on. And you have you'd have the Supreme Court lifetime positions, and these people could never be taken out, and they're a check. We have so many beautiful checks and balances. It's the great thing about America compared to other countries. Every other country is basically subject to the whims of the mob. You know, enough people get angry about something, they vote in their people, and if 52% of the people in the country hate women, they're just going to have anti-woman laws, and that's it. America has so many things in place, just institutionally designed to stop crazy, radical overnight shit from happening, that we only slowly evolve. And maybe that's not great for everybody. Maybe a faster evolution would have helped women and minorities, but it also prevents fast evolution in the opposite way. And as long as we're moving forward like ants, we're always going to probably move in the right direction, because the wind always blows towards the truth, and ants get blown by the wind, and we are nothing but ants in the wind, and therefore we become dandelion seeds as well.
One thing in entertainment you should watch this week. I know you're not a Bill Maher fan, but your boy Milo's going to be on real
yeah,
time.
I saw that. I saw that somebody pulled out of it.
Yeah.
On the show.
Yeah.
Because these people are the term is now regressive left. They're just fascists. Like there's no other term for it. There's just people that say, I don't like what he's saying. I think violence is an appropriate response to what he's speaking about.
And I think we've talked about this probably the last 3 weeks. Don't touch people. Don't hit each other. No matter, you need to control yourself no matter what somebody's saying to you. It's like be an adult. But that's going to be I like Maher personally. I think he's funny, and he's one of those people who I think is pretty genuine. Like, I don't agree with everything he always says, but I think he's real. I mean, he was smoking a joint on stage and is pretty open about shit like that. And him and Milo is going to be a weird dynamic, a weird interview, because you know those two are nowhere near on the same spectrum.
I wouldn't say that.
No?
Here's the thing. Milo is he's clearly a provocateur,
mm-hmm.
and that's – he admits it, which – he's a pro wrestler. And he,
yeah.
And what's funny is when people get angry, I'm like, he admits that he's doing this to get a rise out of you, and you're letting it happen. What's wrong with you people? You're the people that saw Ric Flair and booed him. Like, what are you, fucking marks? But they are. But behind his provocations, Milo has legitimate points.
Sure.
And – the one thing, and I thought this because everybody's like, oh, he's the other week it was Bill Maher, Sam Harris, and I love Sam, and that fucking blonde chick who's a conservative, Lori, something like that.
Tommy Lahren.
Tommy, there we go.
Yeah.
That's not even a name. Fuck you. You can't be a conservative if your name is Tommy. Like, that's a hippie name. But, and I didn't watch it, but there is very, very significant common ground between Maher and Milo, whereas it concerns Islam. And if the topic of the conversation moves, and if the topic moves that way, they will be very much an echo chamber. Same with, you know, if you listen to Milo or Sam Harris when they talk about the role Islam in the world, they're identical.
Yeah.
And maybe for different reasons, but they find very, very common ground. And, you know, Milo, and the other thing about Milo is he's unlike almost anybody's ever seen as far as semi-mainstream right wing. Yes, anything you call him is inaccurate because he's a gay Jewish foreigner. Like, and he loves black dick. Like, what can you really say about him? Like, personally, you can't be like, you're a racist. No, I love black dudes. You're a homophobe. I'm gay. You're a pro-Christian. My mom's Jewish. Like, he checks off all the boxes.
It's a good gimmick.
Yeah, but more than that, he understands the idea of being funny. And he's very used to being in heated arguments, and he knows how to control things. He's very good at pushing buttons. And he'll just let things slide a bit. Oh, whatever, darling. I just don't care about that. Oh, yes, I was just being silly. He's very good at deflecting. He's one of the best I've ever seen at deflecting things. He's like, oh, yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. Let's talk about the evil rapes of women in Copenhagen by all the Muslim immigrants. And people are like, oh, what? Huh? But you just ignored the other thing. He's outstanding. So, and you know what? He doesn't take it personally. He doesn't get upset. He doesn't get angry. He sees all of it as performance. And let's face it, Twitter banned him, and now he's on HBO. So Milo is just winning his way up to the top.
Yeah, I'll just be interested to see how Maher approaches it, if he's going to play up. Because he's not like a safe space guy at all, that sort of thing. If he's going to come down on Berkeley and support freedom of speech and go that route, or if he's going to call him out for some of his – you know, racial shit he's spewed over the years. It's just interesting dynamic, and it's a big platform for Milo, and for Maher, it's kind of a challenging guest for him to have on. To me, it's just very entertaining, and it's one of those things where you're going to wonder how's this going to turn out a little bit.
I think I have a feeling that Maher's going to come on his side, yeah, especially with the freedom of speech thing. Because it doesn't matter if you're left or right. The way that Milo's people have been treated, especially at Berkeley, that's legitimate fascism. And the irony being that they claim they're anti-fascist, which is such a fascist thing to say, I think. This is fucking Asian middle school teacher who leads an organization called By Any Means Necessary. And she legitimately was seen on TV punching people. And she says that anybody who, like, espouses the views of Milo should not be allowed to speak in public. Like, she's a real nut job. And I just think, again, it's Milo, especially on a university campus, it's a great visual. Because, let's face it, if there's 20,000 people on a university campus, like, 1,000 of them are Republicans. That's just how it is. And so it's Milo and a few guys versus all these people who are burning up Starbucks, even though they hire refugees, and whatever, you know, all these buildings. And it's very, very easy to be like, for Milo to paint himself as a victim and saying, look, you might not like what I say, darling. And we'll always say darling. But I should be allowed to say it, and Mara's going to be like, yeah, you should. And Milo can then transition from that to Islam. He could probably control this whole thing, especially given, again, no matter what point Mara has against him, Milo will argue it, but never take it personally. It's that British thing. They don't take things personally. They're very good at being distant and somewhat aloof. And as a general rule, Brits are gay. Milo is just very gay.
I will be watching that.
Me too.
Yeah, it'll be good. Other than that, I don't have much else going on. Did we miss anything?
Pitchers and catchers reported this week. Otherwise, nothing.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. I'm Matt. That was Mike. We will talk again next week. Bye-bye.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day.